differences and the and I differentiate between the two because one's a physical thing,
organ,
and the other.
Hey, hit star 2 on your phone and see what it says. Did it say there's
interesting. Yeah.
It was who's playing games here? Come on.
2 moderators and 4 participants.
So one's Joyce and the other one's Bob. So Bob's probably going to pop in, is my guess, right? So
anyways, it definitely worthy of a listen back at the...
Nine.
Yeah, no, I think it's aisle 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. that question and the response that was evoked by Ian, because he said no. So, what came up also, which I thought was really cool, is Ian makes a statement that, and he was just chatting, so it was in a kind of chatty way that, you know, the RNA drops is like cleaning up your image when you take them. And I keyed in on that word image right away. I don't know if anyone else caught it. And why for me is we know that our likeness is in the image of God. Or, I don't know, somewhere in the Bible it says that God created you in the image of God or something. I can't quote the Bible. I don't know the Bible, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Absolutely.
And so engaging in RNA drops cleans up our image, and that was that's what Ian has stated, which I thought was pretty cool.
Makes us taller. Well, you know what, the question that wasn't asked, and we know how he is with his words, right? So, does it affect brain tissue? Not the mind, but brain tissue.
Right. And that's what we were chatting about. We were talking brain tissue and the lipids and fat that are contained in the brain within the skull, the gray matter of it all, and I would, you know, and all that the physiological functioning of the brain, and my sense of it is absolutely it would affect that. It's part of your meat sack body. How could it not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the question was, does RNA affect the mind? Right. That's what Brian is saying. What's the mind? Is that the labyrinth of mind, the thinking, the precepts, the conditioning of the mind that, you know, the chatter that goes on inside your head, the way you, all of that. Very interesting.
The element of a person that enables them to be aware of the world and their experiences, to think, to feel, the faculty of consciousness and thought. No reference to brain tissue.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it says for brain?
No, for mind.
For mind. Okay. Yeah.
That might be where he's... Maybe that's it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to make his work a little bit, you know.
Oh, you mean like tear it up a little bit on the weekend and have some fun?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of work? Yay! But I did get this is a hoot. And about 50 minutes into the first hour, Ian goes off and says, yeah, you got to get yourself a death certificate. And then you won't have to be bothered with taxation and driver's license or you know, passing through borders, because you can just show them your death certificate and say, I'm not here, I'm dead, you know, and because you've had an autopsy, and you, now you have your death certificate. Removes the authority right out of your world. It was funny.
It
makes
rich.
You want to
it's
think
rich.
About it a little bit.
It's rich.
Rich, yeah.
Oh, Rich from Down Under or something? No? Yes? No? Or from Connecticut or something?
Down Under? Where's that?
Oh, hey,
oh,
Bob.
Hey, Bob.
No, that's Rich.
That's
Diane
Rich,
and I have used that. When we're feeling hunk-bunkerous, we go, that's Rich. So I'm commenting on that idea about the death certificate. Ion did tell us the first, within a month or so of ionization 2 years ago to publish our obituaries.
Yes.
Told me and Carolyn to do that.
Yeah.
But we didn't do it. It just upset too many people, for Carolyn's world anyways.
And I now, as you mentioned it, I can
there'd
recall that.
There'd be a lot of celebration
that.
In my world. If I had
the thing that
there would have been,
yeah.
there would have been dancing in the streets. Bob is gone.
When he was when he was saying that, I recall a movie that I had just recently watched on television about this. Old, and it's a recently enough movie, and I might recall the actor, well-known actor. Sissy Spacek was in the movie as well, but can't remember the title, but the movie is about this old hermit guy who had taken himself away from town for the last 40 years up into the woods and the mountains and had left it all alone. He's getting old now. So he plans his funeral party before he dies. And he's inviting everyone and anyone to come and tell their story about him. And he's going to provide music and this and that and whatever. And then that's what the movie is about. And then it shows up as to why he went and became a hermit 40 years before and whatever.
All the stories point that out.
Yeah, at the end of
the
movie,
the
yeah.
Like
no. Nobody even, as the movie folds out, no one even went up
shows
and
that.
Told their story. He ends up addressing the gathering of people from four counties. And the movie takes
place.
Exactly, and he tells them what occurred 40 years back that he was so ashamed of, that he really wasn't the cause of directly of the death of the love of his life and her husband, who the husband actually killed the woman
right.
that he had fell in love with, and he tried to save her and couldn't, and he was so ashamed of having taken up with a married woman and felt like it was because of him that caused her to die, and no one even ever knew of that story of what really really happened until
but this is the
40
ghost
years
talking.
Later at his funeral party. No, it was him. He was still alive, just an old.
Oh, he had a pre-wake memorial.
He had a re-wake.
Yeah. and people did show up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, from all over the counties, four counties all over the place, yeah. They put up little
movie.
Tents for the day, and who was it? I'll think of the name of the actor. You'll recognize his name, but I just not to me right now. Anyways, that's what I thought about when Ion was talking about. Get your death certificate, go get a autopsy so you have a piece of paper, and that whole piece of paper verification then came up in the third hour with Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah, everybody says Kenya. They're not getting that Ion's saying he was born in Indonesia. No one else says
that. Right. And the fact that the numbers don't add up or don't line up.
Some private reading or our own sessions, he went through in detail all the issues of that, explaining the contradictions of the mother and the father and when they were in Hawaii and when they were
right.
in Kenya and this and that. It's Ion could make a case about it if he was interviewed.
Yeah. Well, there's documented evidence that the prime minister or whatever the head of Kenya, I believe it's Kenya or maybe Indonesia, they refer to Obama as their homeboy.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just recently he addressed a group of leaders or council people or something.
So I want to address MJ. MJ is fascinated by the Bob Marshall interview, and he said, what about editing together the Bob Marshall laughs? Well, you can do that, MJ.
I could,
edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do it. You have permission to play with his laugh.
It's hilarious.
I should just call. I should just
You're,
call.
Yours, him. Too. Yours, too, when you're with him in particular.
Oh, it's always great because he was a kid when I met him, and we've been laughing since 1981, 82 when we met. 83 in that period. Yeah, I'm going to just put you guys on hold. I'm going to call his number. Let's see if we can get him. Just see if he's going to answer.
That'd
hey,
be cool.
Before you do that, hey, Bob, before you do that, did you just cut in? We were talking about RNA does not have an effect on the mind, according to Ion today, in the first hour.
Yeah. What about it?
Well, our conversation, is he differentiating between the gray matter of the brain and the mind as the labyrinth of the mind and the thing we do in our head, our thinking and thoughts and all of that?
We went through a lot of that in one of the rewrites, but I've asked Ian about the brain, the difference between the mind, the brain, and thought and the conduits and the overlaying. A year or so ago, I did a lot, and it becomes indecipherable what's what, because we don't know what thought is. And, you know, as Brian gets into what's thought in relation to everything. But I think he means it doesn't affect the mind, as he defines it, the thing that monitors the autonomic system. That's all the mind's supposed to do, is monitor the autonomic system. And that those breathing and those things, it's just tickering away, monitoring it. But we got abstracted into putting language into that monitoring.
Yeah, which makes us now just think, which is what we're not supposed to be thinking.
We monitor the content of the tickering. It's like the Wall Street ticker tape. It's just going on, blah, 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 and you can't stop that, but you put semantic meaning in there. And then you get swept along by it, and it can't end. So that's where you get screwed up, trying to stop your thinking and come to a conclusion when it's just the flow of the river blood, the blood.
Right.
And then
going
back to that's why Ion's is always saying, that there is no, like, once you've done that, then there is no subconscious.
Yeah. There is no subconscious.
It's all one piece. You know what I mean? As soon as you quiet the mind completely, it's just. It's all one. It's just one.
Not one because there's duality cultural polarity. And the other thing is, what were you just saying? I think McLuhan's definition of the unconscious is the ionic. It's what you're not noticing. So things in your immediate environment are your present unconscious. You're not noticing things. That's all it is. It's part of your immediate world or other worlds. You're not noticing it. You're unconscious. It's there, but you're not noticing. That's all. That's what the unconscious is. Like, you're not thinking about your refrigerator right now, MJ. You're not listening to the buzzing of it, I assume, while engaged with the voice.
Exactly. But I'm just not noticing it.
Yeah, it's there, and your brain is, well, okay, what is the thing that does the noticing? And regardless of your conscious noticing, what's that? That's the larger now, probably. That's your you, the other you.
Yeah, I don't know. I get it. So Bob,
they tune in their ears to hear the refrigerator hum, would it then shift your noticing, and then that would become your ground?
No, that would be part of your figure, and the ground would be that because you tuned in and someone was talking to you, lose track of what the person was saying to you because you get distracted by the new figure of the fridge, and so the person's talking becomes the ground. It's always shifting, this sensory interplay.
But even those things can be manipulated, like just from being like a car jockey and that, you know, from like Scottsdale to Vegas and that. One of the things I learned as far as like just driving fast all the time is instead of like glancing around, most people when they drive, like they glance and look around, you know what I mean? You're watching things, you know what I mean? From, you know, you glance from one side to the other, your eyes are darting. But what I found is that if I would, and it kind of would spook some people if they were driving with me, and I would have to explain to them what I was doing, was that I would just stare directly straight out, and I'd almost look like I was in a trance or something. But in all actuality, I was watching my entire, from the peripheral, right from left all the way over. And if anything kind of weird happened in my peripherals, then I could react better. Whereas if I was driving along normally and kind of just glancing around, I was always pinpointing on things, always leaving a blank spot. So I found if I just kind of stared and almost and just like took it all in, like I was, you know, like a lamp almost, or like reversing a lamp kind of thing, I was able to react so much more, so much quicker.
Okay, MJ, now here's an example how you apply McLuhan to that. The collective environmental unconscious. McLuhan said that tennis became popular in the 20s and 30s because people started driving automobiles and using the peripheral vision just the way you said it, okay? Darting back and forth. You were doing a bit differently, but moving their eyes to the periphery, which they didn't really have reason to in such a hyped-up mechanical environment, and that moving of the eyes evoked the desire of a game that would mime that sensory activity. So tennis came in where you watch the ball go back and forth from the periphery of your eye. There is an example of a collective unconscious response in the human creativity, making the game tennis or make it popular because there was an effect caused by driving the car. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, fascinating.
As a theory.
Yeah, tennis is such a beautiful actual game to watch. It's just a match to watch. It's just... I kind of got
See, that's what McLuhan said. The games are miming the tensions in the society caused by the media of the society. Those tensions are what people aren't fully aware of, so they create games to mime what they're engaged in, but they're not fully aware that the game started from some action they were doing in their environment.
The game tennis is just such a, I don't know, what's the word, just for everything, it's, you know what I mean, the court, like you were saying, like the tension, you know what I mean, the racket, just the fact that it is called a court, it's the duality of it. It's
like a conversation, watching two people talk, but it's in mechanical culture. So they bat a ball back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like we're doing that. We're doing verbal tennis now.
More like soccer. These days.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons why I refuse to read McLuhan until, I don't know, I've heard you squeeze the lemon and you know, all the people. Like, I get so much more from learning from people that have spent decades looking into someone. I don't want to clutter my mind with my own, like, with
yeah,
the
no,
whole
that, this is what McLuhan said. The teacher's job was to save the student time. So I save you time by giving you points that you may never even find that he wrote.
And I don't want to poison my mind with my own.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the thing. It's just like I'm sure I'm gonna. I'm gonna go dig around.
Well, are you listening to the moi shows where Ion's featuring a lot of McLuhan?
Yeah, he used one of the clips I sent him or sent you. That long one where he's really funny, that one.
No, well, that was one that we found a couple of years ago. You found it again and sent it to us.
But
we've had it on the list for a couple of years.
I'm sure,
you know when that was?
Sure, yeah.
That's a few days.
Right.
That's in May 69, a few days after he's gone to the Bilderbergers and made fun of them. Okay, May 69. And you can read his letter to Prince Bernhard, who went on to the Lockheed bribery scandal in 77. You read his letter to Bernhard. It's an incredible letter describing what went on at that conference, you know, putting down what would become the Trilateral Commission before there's a Trilateral Commission. So it's a couple of days later, he made fun of George Ball on the plane coming back from Denmark, who was beginning to write the policy statement for the new Nixon administration about Vietnam. And McClellan walks up the corridor of the plane, wherever it is, maybe it was first class, and he sees Ball and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm writing a thing for Nixon's administration for the policy." And McClellan looks at him and says, "Oh, that's going to be Custer's last stand." And Ball looked at him and was shocked. He told him that the Vietnam effort would be Custer's last stand. You know, the famous Custer, the guy wiped out by the Geronimo or something, the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So he insulted the whole Ball enterprise, and he also insulted Dean Rusk at the meeting talking about why Trudeau wouldn't support the Pentagon budget. But back, so why are we talking about this bill? So that's talk that you're listening to on the first MOA is a few days later, and he's like feeling his oats, and he goes on for like 15 minutes with nothing but jokes. He just says jokes to all these big publishers. And then he makes fun of the new launch of the Jacqueline Suzanne book, The Love Machine, which was just launched that day. So that's the context for that recording. And then the second one is Edmund Newman, famous CBS journalist, interviewing McClellan.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't in the second interview that was in MOA that Marshall referenced jazz music.
Yes, that's why you posted the jazz thing, which and I played today. Yeah.
Yeah, which was cool, and that was synchronicity that shows up with the chip body.
Okay, what is synchronicity? I'm not sure which part are you saying is the synchronicity.
This part that it was either right before I listened to MOA that a friend of mine had sent that swing clip.
Which is a great clip. The young girls playing jazz are really good.
Right. So I had, going through my email and then...
Then you hear McClellan talk about
Duke
jazz.
And then listen to that, and it was like, oh, my gosh, and here's this jazz thing. I've got to I'll post this. This will be fun because it was just really great music, you know?
Yeah, and I knew that's why you posted that. I knew you'd heard it on MOA, you know, that he'd been talking about
I was
jazz.
Hoping that I figured you would connect that because I didn't post it with the – I ended up posting – I don't know where I posted it at.
No, it's in the thread, on the MOA thread.
It is on the MOA thread? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Did you just hear MJ? Did MJ just say, it's on the MOA thread? Did you just say that, MJ?
No. I said it's on Dukes. Because I just know.
Are you the Google bot that goes in there?
No, God, I don't even know how to use a Google bot. No, I've never been on Dukes. That's for people that have had readings.
So you just heard us talk about it or something. But
I get way more fun just from go ahead,
so,
Bob, sorry.
Yeah, I was talking to Ion, maybe during Melting Titanium, why he is using McClellan. Why is it McClellan on Ion and all that? And I'm still working it out with him, but it's pretty amazing that that he is acknowledging McClellan as the guy talking about Ion or something about the Ionic meaning before Ion. And you get incredible statements in the publisher's talk before the Edmund Newman one where he says, radio created depth criticism. That is the most important kind of statement.
Radio created, say that again, radio created
depth
what?
Depth criticism. Depth criticism was the new style of literary criticism that came out of the 30s in Cambridge called the New Criticism. And it was trying to understand Finnegan's Wake and T.S. Eliot and Pound, the new poets of England. And so they were writing about it. The main guy was I.A. Richards. Here's the McLuhan point. He talks a lot about Finnegan's Wake and Ezra Pound and everybody, but he's not celebrating them as what great poets. He's saying that those kind of poets and subsequent depth criticism, were an effect of the radio environment. He's not identifying with the cultural content. He's pointing out that without radio, you wouldn't have had those great writers in that style. See, so and I've said that for decades, and that statement proves it. He says radio created depth criticism. And that's the significance, that radio created it. So TV created pop art, not Andy Warhol.
But the meme that Andy Warhol utilized in his artwork, if you will.
Yeah, he's the human innovator.
Art.
He did. McLuhan's trying to get you to look at the larger medium of the society and then go and look and do an inventory of the sciences, the arts, the movies, the bulldozers, everything that's going on. You can see the characteristics of it are resonating with the hidden ground of radio, or in Warhol's time, TV and satellite. Look at the qualities of the TV situation and how it changes society, and what are seen as new things like pop art are reflex reactions to the television environment. That's the insight. And then you get to ION. What is the ground of ION? The chip landscape. He says it.
He creates
the internet. The internet evoked an ionic response, or evoked ION, whatever that is. That's the McLuhan point.
And he runs rampant through it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And no other medium, spirit channel, whatever you want to call it, ever did that.
Well, and in the advent of computer technology coming on the scene, if you will, you can see the rise in soccer in out
yeah.
here. Like
that's
soccer
a good example.
Didn't even exist except over in Europe, but like. It just kind of came on the scene in the 90s.
Now, here's what you bring that up.
And now every kid plays soccer and travel soccer and scholarships.
Tina, hold it. We got the point. And let me respond and tell you how to look at that. You talk to a sociologist, they might say, well, that's because of the new immigrant population that came from all over the world that played soccer for decades, coming to North America and infiltrating locally. Because you have these third world country guys in the local schools. That's the chemical body causation. You might say it that way. But then you would tell that person, no, the internet created a sensibility that soccer could meet the tensions. It mimed the tensions caused by the internet environment. See, that's a different way of looking at it than claiming that it's just because there's an immigrant population. That's
right.
how you use McLuhan. Just an alternative way to get someone to rethink what they think is obvious reasons. Well, just all these immigrants came and brought soccer. You know, that's a cliche response. There's no perception there.
And for Canada, it's not true. It's just like both girls and boys. It's just, I know for Western Canada anyways, it's soccer is just like a staple for children's sports.
And why is that? Why is that?
British influence along with field hockey.
Because Canada has no identity? I don't know.
Yeah, we have an identity. It's called the Crown City of
so
London.
They're not, they don't identify with shit, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, they'll do anything. But see, this is... But what are you saying, MJ? Are you supporting the McLuhan point or saying another point about Canada?
I'm just... Well, as far as America goes, yeah, I can see where that's...
They're what? Say, know that. Say what your clause, a bunch of words, so indicate of all the factors we could be thinking about, what you're indicating.
That in Canada, it's different than the U.S.
What's it?
It's more recreational.
That soccer, as far as, okay, and maybe it's not on a, you know, on the large professional scale, you know what I mean? So I think they've actually revived it again, a new league here. But children are brought up. It's just like you either play
again,
soccer,
MJ. I do not know what the fucking noun of your sentence is. What are you? Be clear. Say a few fucking words, about what the it or that refer. Are you saying something about soccer? And what
yes,
aspect
I'm
of it?
Speaking about soccer. And
now say it.
People playing it. Children play it.
Yeah. What about it?
Lots here in Canada.
Okay, they're playing lots. And why is that?
I don't know. It's
well, we are suggesting a couple of reasons here. We're suggesting it's the internet or the population. What is your view about those two proposed suggestions?
I don't think so. Well, here in Canada, it's always been. So
you don't think so? About what?
That it's the internet as far as here in Canada. I can't speak to what you're
Why isn't it the internet in Canada?
Because it was already happening before.
Already happening here. Well, I knew Canada back 50, 60, 40 years ago. There was no soccer. It did maybe surface in Toronto in the 80s. And that's when the immigrants started coming.
Okay.
So it looks like you're supporting that the immigrant is the reason.
Yeah, I guess so, because it would have been the 80s that I would have noticed it.
Right. And so if there was a lot of soccer starting to happen in Toronto, and they even had a team in the 80s or 90s in whatever the professional league was, but it still was not, it didn't seem to me on the radar, even though I'd gone to New York, on the media radio,
but a
as
bigger,
it is now.
Yeah. And what a bigger noticing that I, in this soccer thing that is going on these days, adding to soccer is the fact that girls are now athletes, be it soccer,
yeah.
Basketball. I mean, there's, whereas when I was in school, there was no athletic
we know
scholarship
that. Go
to
faster,
college
Tina.
For soccer.
Go faster. We know what the yes, definitely when you were in school.
So
when
you
I
have
was
a gender
Europe,
thing going on.
When I
on
grew
as
up,
well.
The fucking girls were invisible. They weren't even allowed to play.
Right. Yeah. So what's caused? So does the internet also has caused
the chemical body? It's freed up the chemical body. It doesn't matter which chemical body, male, female. Is because it's a minor factor. It's not the hidden ground. The hidden ground is your chip body. So the old body becomes the playground. And so everybody gets to enjoy their chemical body because it's kind of obsolete.
Right.
That's why the girls are allowed in.
And that's why there's this so-called, like, falling of the glass ceiling, if you were
Right. I was just thinking yesterday, walking along the beach, I see these women walk by, jogging, whatever. They're fucking good shape. I would, if I bothered them and they wanted to fight me, I would back off. You don't know how fucking tough they are. It's not like 80 years ago when I was a kid, man. You could beat every fucking girl up. Now you don't know what they know. It really is unisex. They're not girls anymore in the old divided sex thing. There are very strong women walking around.
Hmm. And I was just reading recently, came across, I don't know what.
And you can see that, how that caused male chauvinism.
The book of Thomas.
Tina, you can see how that caused male chauvinism or brought back, because men were scared shitless. McLuhan talked about it. He said women's lib is scaring the shit out of men in the 70s. Because they actually, it wasn't women scaring, it was that the women were going into a hyper-developed chemical body and had mobility with it, even sexually. That intimidated those human beings that thought they were men.
And women wield so much more power sociologically anyways.
They kind of did away with the gender bias.
Right. So what were you going to say, that, Tina? The other thought?
It took away the gender bias that we see out in the culture.
In North America. And
in
maybe
North
Europe. Not in Middle East. Why is the Middle East very conservative that way? What is in their culture that does not respond to the internet or television that way? See, that's you get a figure ground. What's the unconscious there?
Fear.
Of what? Because fear is a pretty common thing. That's almost like saying everything is one or love. It doesn't have any particularity in this situation to be useful in the pattern making.
Yeah.
the religious mores or rules and regulations.
Which are
I take exception with attributing women's rise to the internet, because women's rise started
Yeah, we're not saying it was the internet. It was caused by television. We're talking about the 60s, 70s. That's when McLuhan was talking about it. So, yeah, we're not talking about the internet as the cause. Now, if you take exception even to TV causing it, it doesn't matter whether you take it. We can take exception. You can come up with a thought to counter any thought. I'm just saying explore the validity of that meme or thought, and you'll see it holds its weight as much as any thought could. But you wouldn't live by it.
Mm-hmm.
You just move on and consider something else.
Yeah, or notice how what doesn't topple that meme. McLuhan went around saying he would lay out the evidence that the meeting was the message, and then he'd be shocked. He said nobody demurred. Nobody was coming up with a counterargument. He was looking for a counterargument so he wouldn't have to sort of think about it that way. And he couldn't find one. You see what I'm saying?
He was
probing
pretty much
the very
out there theory. On a limb all by himself. There was really, or let me ask you, was there anyone out there when McLuhan was out on this limb to engage for him to engage and counter what he was putting out there?
No, he was the major genius of the time, the anti-environment. He was like the Einstein of the second half of the century. He was by himself. Nobody understood him. And I have a 1970 New York Times short interview with him, and they're interviewing him from New York, and he's up in Toronto, and he says, "It's pretty lonely up here. I'm all by myself. It'd be nice to have someone to join in and help me here with these discoveries." Says that. But he, what is another point? He was so, he even says, in an interview in a TV show in 67, he says, "I use the enemy as my model. I see myself as the enemy." He even fucking flaunted it, his outsiderness, while he was a professor. I go back to the first time I heard you guys talking about McLuhan last fall, maybe, and look how far you've come to, because Tina was saying, I think ASA wanted to know who he was, and someone says he was a teacher, and you said, no, he wasn't a professor. He's some advertising guy. What you guys knew so little about McLuhan a year ago, if you go back and listen to the old tailgates. Now look what you know.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
No, Joan.
Joyce.
Don't bring
hey, Bob,
in your feelings.
You don't get my joke.
No, I get the joke.
Joke.
I'm making
Bob.
A counter joke. I'm raising a question as a joke. Don't bring in your feelings. It is a joke. But it derails the conversation to bring in your personal, for better or worse. I mean, you can be a joke. You can't stop the timing. But the thing is that you have this guy. Imagine Einstein saying, Einstein lays out his theory in 1922 and all that, and he's out there. And they interview him, and he says, "Well, I don't know what I think until I say it." Bingo, there's one, okay, that McLuhan said. I don't have a point of view. And yet he's saying all this stuff as if it's a point of view. Look at the outrageous statements he made in public. See, that's why he never was taken seriously on the serious level he was presenting it. He says, they'd say, "Are you a Catholic?" "Yes, I'm a Catholic, but I don't discuss that in public." Now, why wouldn't you discuss your religion? See? These were all new ways of being a public intellectual. He was a genius in just being silly in public, but what he had to say was really interesting. You get this is the richness of the guy, the complexity.
Well, you've heard of at a dinner party, don't talk, politics or religion.
Right.
Or else they'll show you.
That was the 19th century when it was the ground. It really was serious back in the 19th century when there was a literate public, and your point of view defined who you were. So you didn't bring your point of view into social gatherings to try to keep it calm. Then what happens in the 20th century? You got to have a fucking point of view and be adamant about it to even be socially respectable, because it's the content. It's not the ground anymore, having an opinion. about those topics?
Those topics as religion or
religion
politics.
Religion and politics,
and
yeah.
Or politics. Okay, okay.
Yeah, he used to point out that Laffin, they did all kinds of jokes on sex and all this controversial stuff in the norms bourgeois sense, but when they joked, the Smothers Brothers, when they joked about Vietnam, they got taken off the air. And McLuhan said, yeah, sex and all the other stuff that they joke about is funny, but the hidden ground, the present conflict in Vietnam is not funny. Because it's the main crisis in America. It's an expression of that crisis.
Hmm.
So you can't just say freedom of speech when you look at the ratios or different subjects that are allowed to be prominent and the others that aren't. What aren't we allowed to talk about today? I'll tell you what you're not allowed to talk about. To go around and say you're 89 years old. That I outrage millions of people in New York City with that statement. Back when I was there in the 90s and early thing. When I told them my age, all these cool people standing there with no clothes on, they all went shock mode. Said, what do you mean you're 78 years old? And they'd really get aggressive and demand me to prove it. See, age was a hidden ground there. That's what singled you out. If your body did not look like what it should be at a certain age, that bothered people. You get it? It didn't bother them if I showed up with no clothes on or whatever New York style I had on, some eccentric thing. But when I told them my age, they freaked. It pressed a hidden button. What was that button?
Hey, Bob. It's Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
I think it's immortality. You're not allowed to talk about the fact that you're God.
Right.
And anything that threatens that image or any images around death, you can forget it.
Yeah, we have very rigid categorizations of how the chemical body progresses. We know what a teenager looks like. We know what a 20-year-old looks like. We know what a middle-aged person looks like. And a senior citizen. And that's the chemical. That's the ground, as they're trying to say in the show today. The chemical body is the new religion, the new eternal cliche that the priests control. And if you fuck with that image, like, you know, like me with my age, that violates the limitations of the religion of the chemical body. Religion of the chemical body. Right, Jenny? You get it, what I'm saying?
Yeah, sorry, I'm cooking dinner, but I had you on mute. But yes, I do get it. I totally get it. And then any image that's counterintuitive to what the culture says, you know, then you're violating, like you said, the high priest of the chemical body. That's exactly right, Bob. And there's hell to pay for that until there's not, and then you're giddy with it. But
yeah, and that's what's revolutionary about Ion. Ion is not telling you to become some abstract divine thing that Zen Buddhism or Hinduism or some religion or cult will tell you. He's telling you you have a body that has more non-physical, and you're eternal whether you like it or not. Even if you die, you're eternal. In the physical. Now that is radical in our terms, our time. That violates the chemical body religion.
Oh, yeah. It's
absolutely
totally opposite of
yeah,
what one might have been told to believe is.
Right,
truth.
Someone's got to do a mute. They're causing a speakerphone echo or something. But go ahead, what'd you say, Tina?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I forgot what I said.
about eternity. The chemical body is eternal. Probably the hardest thing to get your head around is how can I drop my meat sack and go to the guff, yet my meat sack still is eternal? Where is it?
Why would we drop your meat? You don't have to drop your meat.
You don't have to, but if you do, I understand Ian says if you do drop your meat sack and it's buried, there's still a realm, a world or something, a vibration where it is still eternal.
Yes, Bob, that's what I was just going to say. Based on what, you know, we've learned about the angel chart, I think it's definitely a frequency that exists in a world and it's based on an image. And I was seeing this morning because I had this whole huge, big epiphany about all this, and part of that was about Elizabeth Taylor, why she can leave and come back and be perfect.
Yeah.
Because she's a frequency that's never ending, and she'll just migrate through various worlds, and she'll end up right back at where we all end up, which is 6.944 megahertz frequency. Pretty freaking cool, if you ask me. So you can either hang on and go for the ride, or you can drop your meat sack, and you'll still end up there, just like Ion said.
Yeah, the larger now contains the perfect Ginny body. You know, the body that'll stay forever. You can digress and take subways to subset worlds where you thought you dropped it off, right? But it's still, there's a frequency in the larger now where it exists forever. And you don't reincarnate. You're always that body. So I guess, and you've always been Ginny.
That is so totally exactly correct based on Ionic principles. And once you get it in a, like, visceral way, it's very liberating. It just starts to set you free. It's very liberating, very liberating. Because that's exactly, it's all frequency. You sync up with it as you're willing to allow it. And it's just amazing, but that's exactly right.
And what's amazing is the RNA drops is the food for that condition, that frequency.
Yes, that's amazing. It's one of the, well, it's the beginning of the consuming process, as you know, because there's, you know, I think the bread of life and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, absolutely, based on what we've heard through the rewrite series. It's the beginning of the consuming process. So it's almost like the groundwork. It's the foundational work that's going to let you chunk off those two lame strands of DNA that are clogged up with, like, a bunch of corroded imagery and artery stuff that needs to get chunked out so the rest of your DNA can evolve and unfold in a brand new pure, and
remember the 144,000 strands it already has on the perfect vibration level.
That's totally correct. And you think that's some pure triangulation, and it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Okay, I have to make meatballs, so I'm going to go back on mute now.
Yeah, remember we're starting we're starting an hour earlier now. You know that.
Yeah, 6:30. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, love. Thanks. Bye, everybody.
And so, Ion made this statement today on hour one of cash flow that what the RNA drops do or is it allows you to the cleaning up of your image.
Yeah.
Of
so that's not your mind. Image. You could say that's your sensory images. It cleans up your tactility. And tactility is the interplay of your self-images between you and you.
Right. And I think that ties right into what Virginia just said about all of the imagery that's clogged up in your DNA of what you think is and whatever she... That's what I was picking up. I couldn't hear her really well.
Yeah.
But it kind of ties into RNA, you know, cleaning it up, clearing it out, cleaning it up.
You wouldn't want to use the word clean because that implies there's dirt or negative.
Dirt, yeah. But maybe opening and allowing.
No, you wouldn't use. That's why you only use the word tactility because it involves both and. Both hyphen slash and, A-N-D. So both is the whatever polarity duality have plus more. That's what's meant by the word tactility. It enhances your tactility.
The only thing is, Bob, I've got to pick up the phone here because, you know, I mean, I know we talk about tactility a lot, but you know how you say triangulation is going to be the downfall of non-physical? I think tactility is going to be the downfall of you because tactility implies duality. It's either or, both and. Triangulation.
Well, that's right. It's not meant to be.
Triangulation
it's both
is
and.
Trinity.
We keep using the word tactility to point out that if you put dialectic or polarity or duality into it, you don't know what tactility is.
Okay, very good. Then, okay, this is what I'd say. Then in the three-part process, okay, the second part would be tactility, but the third part would have to be triangulation because you've got to be able to move past tactility. But if you don't, if you can't get to tactility, you never get to triangulation.
Okay,
so
tactility. Now here, listen to this. Tactility is the tetrad. It's a four-part. Figure to ground is equal to figure to ground, the essence of metaphor. Tactility is a metaphoric, literal process. The triangulation is done from the fourth position. Because the person is in the middle of the triangle. That's the fourth factor.
I thought that was the pentad.
No, the pentad is the machine doing it, living in
the
matrix.
Oh, okay. All right. I still think that tactility, the way that it doesn't come out right for me, because it seems too linear. It doesn't. It's either or both.
Well,
things.
Yeah, you're not getting it. Now, here's the thing. Tactility was the downfall of McLuhan. Those that scientists or whatever who looked at his work did not like the word tactile. Many McLuhan scholars say that was the wrong word. But I think I like to stick with it, and I think McLuhan was right, because you've got to get what you don't think it is.
But quadriphenia is easier. Well, quadriphenia.
Quadriphenia is a human response to the tactile android meme.
Oh, okay. Well, once you get out of that's the whole point. Once you get out of the android meme, all there is frequency, and that doesn't require tactility. That requires
No, frequency. No, you're not getting it. Frequency is tactility.
No,
now,
you have to realize
Ion agrees with me on this point. This is it. He has said it. You go back and listen to Kat. He drops it in. Note when he uses the word tactile. He uses it very precisely and correctly.
Use it precisely and correctly, but then he'll also take it out of places where it's misapplied.
Right, because he knows you're not hearing it the way it's meant or used.
But
Virginia, part of being tactile is not using the word. It's McLuhan saying, I'll never be a McLuhanite, or I don't know what I think until I say it. Tactility includes the dropping of it. That's what tactility is, because it is not any one position. So you bring it back in at the right time with proper tactile sensibility to the proportion and usefulness of it.
Well, to the ratio, I could see that.
Okay, take it for that way for now.
If you get yourself boxed in by it, that's where I think it's a problem.
Right, that's where you can use different scenarios to prevent the boxing in.
Okay, very good. All right. I'm good. All right. Thanks. I really got to go now. All right.
So now, Joyce, it's good timing to say a joke.
Nope. No joke.
It was a tactile situation.
Yeah.
The human
Great
stubbornness.
Joke.
The human stubbornness. Nope. See,
that was
the joke.
Human stubbornness, not mine. Let's just get clear on that.
No, I was talking about Joyce.
Oh, okay. I just heard human stubbornness.
Oh, you might have missed it, Joyce.
Are you saying that you have a bit of a stubborn streak in that you play with, Virginia?
Who, me?
No, Jenny.
Oh, yeah. That's Jenny projected that. She thought we were talking about. Oh, yeah. Jenny's very stubborn.
Okay.
How could you be a minister in this late date and not be stubborn?
I don't know. How could you?
You couldn't.
Okay. Which is why she's not anymore, I don't think. I don't know.
Yeah, she's not so much anymore.
Right.
She can become very stubborn about Ion, but that's just a holdover. So, Joyce, when I objected to your, for better or worse, joke, I was objecting to the timing. For me, and that's just my subjectiveness, it was not appropriate to say that joke at that time. In other words, see, that's a tactile relationship to the people on this call. I'm managing it and not manage it and pretending to be a manager occasionally and then other times letting it ride. That's
Bob,
tactility.
Were you coming from a feeling place?
Yes.
Okay.
Tactility is from a feeling place.
Okay.
There ain't none of you got a clue what tactility is. Fucking drop it.
And that's a tactile response from the expert of tactility who denies any understanding of it. Right? Brian would never admit that he understood tactility, but he knows when you guys don't.
I'll stick to the definition of not using it. I ain't using it.
With the flow, huh?
Hey, Tina, your volume is very, very low.
Yeah. So, Joyce, when I said the wrong joke, you're not to take that personally. It's the words that were said. Whoever said those words at that timing was evoked
by response. No, Joyce. Be tactile. Take it personal, Joyce.
Yeah, hurt my feelings, Bob.
Well, it was done from a feeling place. That's the only game tension you could have. You know, feeling is the closest to what tactility means. It's not a sense. It's the interplay. And what we mean by feelings are probably the resultant, the product of the interplay of what you think is going on. You get a feeling from it. That's a registration of the nonsense of tactility. And McLuhan said that. He said, we all have to navigate by feeling once we had a television environment. And that explains the whole popularity of classes on intuition, psychicness, ESP, all that new age stuff that started with the Esalen Institute in the 60s was a product of the feeling mandate that television brought in, because that was an extension of the tactile sensorium was television. So that's pretty neat to know that.
Perfect. Here's my segue into this. What is meant by the jazz or swing music being the extension of the big note, which is found or written in the tiny notes or whatever? Go ahead.
Okay, that's an old Bob joke, Dobbstown joke. In Zappa's album called Lumpy Gravy, made in 67, was not allowed out till 68. The same period McLuhan's Medium as a Massage album was made, similar styles of editing and collage. In that album, I could even play in the album McLuhan? Lumpy Gravy, which was Zappa's first solo composition as a classical composer. He did his own solo album called Lumpy Gravy, as opposed to what he's doing with The Mother's Invention. And in it, he taped people, he got them to sit inside a big piano, and he had them start talking anything they wanted to talk about. And so these funny conversations, surrealistic impromptu, maybe hippie culture a conversation, L.A. branch of the hippie culture, not San Francisco branch, the freak culture of L.A., one of them talks about everything is it's all one big note. Everything's a vibration. Everything's a frequency. It's all one note, okay? So then that summer, Zappa wrote an article for Life magazine because he was seen as the explainer of youth culture at that point. He had that charisma. He writes about the big note. So this is a concept from Zappa, the big note that contains all the vibrations. So when I made my chart, I played off Zappa, and you notice the subtitle. The title of the chart is Xenochronous Bob's Tiny Note equals the Grand Wazoo's Decade-Dance. Pun on decadence. The Grand Wazoo was an album that Zappa put out in the early 70s, and he had an orchestra called the Grand Wazoo. So I'm saying Xenochronous Bob, and Xenochrony was a term invented by Zappa, talking about all the anomalies we have. He had it in making his albums. Xenochronous Bob's Tiny Note. Instead of saying big note, I played it off Zappa's big note and called my thing a tiny note, because my theory was that things were getting shrunk. Zappa was back in the analog media period of the 60s. I'm in the digital hologram, shrinking hologram phase, so it became a tiny note. And that's very technical what Ion says. He says incredibly accurate biographical statements. He says, blah, blah, blah about the big note today. And he says, that evoked a tiny note. That's an exactly correct statement, but you have to know what the words refer to, right? Now you know.
Thank you. That's why I wrote it down and have the pleasure of asking. So
yeah, he did that
on.
Last week. Last week, I was reviewing the show last night. I think it's in the second hour. Somebody says something. We're talking about the poetry of that when I did the New Heritage reading the lyrics and the idea of being a poet came up. And Ian said, only if you do it over a dollar bill while doing push-ups. Cited what I did physically in April 1975 at CBGB's when it was first starting. He immediately remembered that. You know, he evoked my biography. And then he did it again, I think, today. Oh, he mentioned Mae Brussel in an appropriate thing. He really knows his stuff. He knows all about us.
Oh, speaking of New York, the phone number that I got for Rod McDonald.
Okay,
you
got one for him?
Uh-huh. But it's an old number. It's no longer in service. And those
so he may be dead or he's gone to a senior home.
Connections are gone. Or they're no longer in place.
Right.
For the ex father-in-law, whatever, to that was a number that he had. And
well, thanks for trying to get it. And this was your ex-husband, or who was this? What was the connection?
It was my ex-father-in-law.
Ex-father-in-law knew Rod McDonald, right, and had the number.
Yeah, worked with him and hung out in Greenwich Village with him back in
and
the...
And still had the number.
70s,
and he gave it to
yeah.
you. But
yeah.
it's dead.
But the number's dead, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So...
End of that project for now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks for checking that out.
Yeah, yeah. Took me a while to come back around.
And I bet you it evoked interesting conversations with the father-in-law that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do any. I went through the.
You didn't talk to anybody.
Family,
so it didn't evoke any. It didn't.
Not for me. You know, well, it did sort of. You know, I talked to my son, and then he was like talking to his dad, and then his dad got on the phone with me, who's my ex-husband, which is good conversation, but whatever. And then they went off and whatever, and
right.
then got back to me. And
so you
gave
did
me the
have
number.
A new thing to talk to your ex-husband about for a few minutes.
Oh, no. You don't talk. Hey, Richard does all the talking, mostly.
Oh, you had more stuff to listen to from him. New stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, whatever. But anyway, that was that.
So
I went to email you the number just to say, hey, you know, check it out. And I thought, well, why should I clog it up? Maybe I'll just call the number first and see if I can get Rod on the phone, you know. And I called and went, okay, I'll have to send that email and Bob doesn't have to read it because it ain't.
right.
Yeah.
But the spirituality, any of these words, frequency, vibration, spirituality, they have a baggage, an image repertoire or reservoir that people fall back on thinking they know what they do, what it is. It's just like the word God has a lot of baggage. But ion itself has created baggage about itself. But ion is more than any of those images. So that's what tactility as a word and as a process refers to. The ongoing, no finish line in trying to figure out what it refers to.
Well, it's the interval between the sensing of your feelings, if some sort of sense comes up,
yeah.
for you
yeah.
or not,
yeah.
And it's kind of the interval before you, you know, comment or take an action or whatever. It's that that space between responding or not.
Right. Now, there's an abstraction you're thinking about. Here's an environmental example. McLuhan wrote a column for a dental magazine. Okay? And he's going to point out the role of tactility. So you know what he called his article for these dentists? The gap is where the action is. Isn't that great?
I'm not getting the pun. The gap.
The gap. You know, a dentist looks at holes in the teeth.
Oh, okay. Sure. And wants to fill them.
Yeah, wants to
so
fill them.
So the interval is him going in to see if there are gaps.
That's
the interval,
right?
Right?
And it's, action in terms
Perfect.
Of making money. It's where he makes his money by finding gaps.
Mm-hmm. But it's the action of looking for the gaps is what defines interval. Oh, that's rich.
Yeah. He took his aphorism, like relaxing and allowing, say that's an ionic aphorism, and he made it fit the context and a joke on the dentist as he wrote a column for their magazine.
Because
they're going to say the gap is where the action is. Okay, Dennis, he knows nothing about McLuhan. He says the gap is where the action is. He might immediately think of the dental meaning, okay? And he go, oh, that's funny. He'd get the joke, so to speak, right? Then he'd read the article and found out that tactility or the gap was the most important characteristic of television, which you know the dentist wouldn't even understand. And so he would identify with the title,
yet,
but make no sense out of the article.
He keeps himself in business and in creating you know, his economy by being in the gap, finding the
right.
gap.
By filling it up.
By filling up the gap.
Which is what a lot of literate thought is trying to connect the gap.
And what about the little mirror that he uses? Does it cause the gap?
The little mirror is the visual bias. See, that's the
it reflects.
Yeah, it reflects. It's the effect of the printed page. So the little mirror is actually what our literate minds are. We go around with a little mirror trying to match our inner reality with the outer reality based on a literate standard. And tribal people don't have the little mirror. They're just making or hallucinating all the time. And it's not a problem that they are. And the best example of that is black culture. And that's why they dominated music.
So how do you apply the never mind to this? What you're saying. How do we get to the never mind?
You notice these patterns. You observe them as you watch. In other words, you notice how you're aware of your senses in your body, but you can extend it to the senses in the machine environments and watch those interplay. And you wouldn't have an opinion, but you'll know why jazz becomes popular in the 30s. You'll know why depth criticism takes over due to the tactile effect of radio.
Right.
You'll know why society is where it is right now. Because of the internet, and you'll know why the metaphysician Ion shows up saying internet kind of ideas in the time of the internet.
But are there more gaps? More gaps now than ever, and are dentists really busy their profession?
There are so many gaps now caused by the extension of gappery, which is the internet. That's hypertactility. On my chart, I say it's tactility squared. There are so many gaps now that the old-fashioned gaps called portals have closed and gone out of business. And through the gaps that are extended now, ion could show up. Non-physical could come in and create because there are so many extended gaps now. And then that explains why the metaphor of the black hole is all through culture, because the black hole is the image of tactility or a big gap. And so all kinds of people know the term black hole now because it resonates with the actual environment they live in, which is black holes extended hyperly. When you go on the computer, you go through a black hole.
Talk about imagery. I'm going to send you this new Kia, I'm not sure what kind of car commercial, but the visual imagery of it is just, it's got everything in there. It's got little man, big man. It's got Poseidon coming out of the water and alien ships flying.
Okay, post it on Dupes if you can.
Oh, okay. I think I probably could.
That's right. You see these – now here's where Ion, yes, his language is resonant with the internet, but Ion goes beyond that to the extension of non-physical. That's the revolution of Ion, the first extension of non-physical. New products like RNA drops. These are – we have an Edison lab. It's the new Edison lab producing all this new stuff, extensions of non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Android Me was just extension of the machines, which were earlier extensions of the senses. Those first two phases are gone. We're now into, quote, the mystery landscape, the extension of non-physical, where we can now know it, and therefore we can know the mystery body. That's where I wouldn't limit Ion as an effect to the internet. He's an anti-environment
to
the internet.
Which is retrieval of what we opt
of heaven on earth. Retrieval of heaven on earth.
Right.
Which means that our chemistry, everything in this present earth will change. Everything, including pi.
Including pi, is that what you said?
Yeah, pi, the mathematical.
3.14.
Tell a scientist or a mathematician that pi is changing, they'll fight you to tooth and nail. No way, that's a constant. But see, that's constant. That's the constant of the fallen world, and that fallen world's gone now. You know, the world of the fall. It's not good to call it the fallen world because that implies a negativity, which leads to Gnosticism, which you might notice, Tina, what I posted to counter your Gnostic statement on Dupes. Did you see that, what LaRouche says?
And I know nothing about LaRouche. I just kind of picked up in what that conversation that Bart had posted and LaRouche making.
Right.
You know, just sounded like experiential knowing, whatever, which,
right,
that, I don't
that's
know.
Bart. See, that's Bart's a Gnostic. And
He posted a dialogue of LaRouche making that statement. That's how I read it.
No, I posted it. I posted some LaRouche stuff. I didn't see him
following
it.
Just before your posting of after mine. If you could go back and read it. It just sounded like LaRouche's statement was
sounded like
I just picked up like this, you know, Gnostics, and I'm thinking not Gnostics as people play it out now, but like the original, you know.
Yeah, the original Gnosticism.
First century Gnosticism.
Yeah, and LaRouche is against that Gnosticism and thinks it pervades contemporary culture everywhere. That's his criticism, that ancient Gnosticism, that ideology is everywhere now. And that's what he says, it's all through British science, going back to Francis Bacon and Isaac Newton. There's a whole article, that one of the ones I posted, very interesting. It even gets into Herbert W. Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God.
Yeah.
And his son, Garnet Ted Armstrong. And he says the Queen's the biggest Gnostic alive today. When you take, I'll have to go back and look, if Bart took some particular statements by LaRouche and they sound Gnostic, which is what you're saying, well, I'll look at that. But LaRouche himself is ideologically against Gnosticism in its traditional
sense. Yeah, but what you were just referencing is what came, I think it maybe Bacon and the Queen Mother and all of those other people who just corrupted original sense of Gnosticism in the first century, I guess.
It would have to be different. Our Gnosticism is not the same. That's where LaRouche is erroneous to say a concept or ideology from 700 or 9,000 years ago. To think it's still here as the same concept misses the McLuhan point that it could not be the same because new media would create different societies and retrieve Gnosticism differently.
Exactly, and then goes on
that.
And whines about it. But, you know, I mean, he only took back his perception or his sense of what Gnosticism is to, you know, 700s, the 6th century
right.
or 4th century. And it had already been, and I know so little about it, just seemed to me it's already been corrupted at that point.
Right, so
when you look
at my chart and look in the LaRouche quadrant, you'll see the sensory bias and aspects of Gnosticism that LaRouche is responding to. That's all laid out in the LaRouche quadrant in my chart. The proportions
which
of that limited.
Which is what and that's where he comes from, making your statement that he was totally against that.
Right,
or
and so he replays, now he's the anthropomorphic projection of the newspaper environment, of journalism. Journalism is Gnostic, and so he actually is just miming the voice of newspaper, and during the Android meme, it's just the afterimage of the newspaper environment, or the afterimage of the years 1840 to 1900, crystallized in 1960 and replayed in McCarthyism, 1947 to 57. So that's the kind of complex statement you get from looking at my tiny note. Okay. I gotta go.
Okay.
Bob, before you go, without talking about any private communications between yourself and I, what's your take or what's Ion's take on source code?
On source code?
Mm-hmm.
He's quite critical. Anything that's going on, he's very critical of anything because he knows so much more about anything. So. We know he'd be critical of it, but he could talk about it on a milder level and make some points about it. But I don't know what they are. I have not asked him about it.
No, you should. I'm critical of it myself. Like I can see there's lots to be critical of.
You mean
but,
Linux, Linux, or whatever it is, source code?
No, source code, the movie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Linux. Okay. I don't know the movie, but we can.
Yeah, you really want to check that out. Trust.
Okay, so you think there's an ionic response demanded about that movie?
Yes, it's parallel world. It's parallel
okay, good.
Movie.
All right, that's something. Let me just I want to just
like,
put this
like
on hold.
Not kind of fully. Like it
right,
is
okay,
what it
good.
Is.
I'm just gonna just as a joke put you on hold. I'm going to see if I can get Bob Marshall. Just a second. Okay?
Okay. Warren, I got to wonder if this is the Bob Marshall that came in on a tailgate way long time ago, railing that Bob owes him $50,000 or $50 million or something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because that would be the same Bob Marshall, right? Yeah,
I didn't hear it, but yeah, that's something he would say.
Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious.
Because of, I don't know, some sort of misunderstanding or something. So tell me about this Source Code movie. Just come out in the theater?
Okay, it's ringing. Let's see if he answers. Just a second.
Okay.
Hi, you've reached 416-838-6078. I can't come to the phone right now, but please leave me a message, and I will return your call as soon as I can. Thank you.
Leave him a message, MJ.
Hey, Bob. Love the laugh.
Hey, Bob.
I don't know. Should come play in Cashflow or Tailgate sometime.
You love his laugh.
I don't know.
Your laugh, Bob. He showed up. You showed up before, but maybe this time you should show up and play.
You're talking about me, but we're talking to Bob Marshall.
Yeah, Bob. His laugh is, I don't know, it should be patented. It should be trademarked. It should be, I don't know. Just thinking about it makes me laugh.
Yeah. So there it is. His real name is Ed. His real name is Ed. So, Ed, there it is, a review of your biological laugh. They want to patent it. There could be millions in this, Ed. So get back to us on next cash flow.
There's a transpose in it. Like there's funny, like kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a measure or two, and it transposes. And that's just, it's kind of funny.
Okay, great. And that was MJ talking, Ed. And yeah, the female is Tina. Ed came on the Christmas office party. He only stayed for a few minutes, but if you go back to that, you know, ASA's office party last Christmas, you will hear him come in and introduce himself, and then he didn't stay around long for whatever reason.
But so maybe I'm thinking of a different Bob Marshall, but didn't he show up at a way early tailgate, ranting and raving and yelling at you about you owe him money and stuff?
That was the Church of Subgenius. That was an Australian, a Church of Subgenius guy. And I purposely posted that tailgate was happening right then to see if these Subgenies who hate me would come in. And one of them did. I forget what he's called.
Oh.
He has some crazy name. He's the one who says, "You owe me $50,000.
Yeah, right. I'm going to kill you. I don't like it, though.
And then he left. And then I say something like, there's an example of the insanity over at alt.slack.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, no, that wasn't
so
Bob Marshall.
Totally different. Okay.
Yeah.
My mistake.
Okay. So
we didn't hang
up yet, did we? Is this all on his recording?
Enter the number where you'd like to be called back. When you finish, press pound. To cancel, press star.
That's them, right? So I just click them off.
Hey, is that perfect or what? He's going to hear that and he's going to just start cracking up.
Yeah, that's right.
We should be
that's
just doing
perfect.
This. To, we should be doing this to random people's like messages.
What did you say?
Back in the day, we would have gotten in trouble of playing on the phone or something.
Yeah.
You know?
And Memje, you're saying we should do this more often? Call people? Is that what you were just saying?
Yeah, leave messages. Like even
people tailgate. That don't know. Yeah. Tailgate should drop in on people's answer machines all over the place.
And school them.
Yeah. It's our outreach project.
That's too funny.
Okay, I got to go in reach. Talk to you guys later.
Okay, see ya.
Okay, bye.
Okay, Tina, do you want to know about what's up? I got a man. Actually, I've been working on this bishop's leave. I got to head off to, or at least begin to head off to school at some point. Actually, I'm not in a hurry. I can bend time. It's hilarious.
Well, so back to what when we were in hold, this movie you were saying about called Source Code. It's a new movie out
yes.
in the theaters.
Yeah, it's new. It's new, and of course, because I'm center of the universe as far as I'm concerned.
You are. Yours, anyway.
It's unfortunately, I'm pretty sure it's about me.
Is that really?
Really. Yeah. And it's creepy for me. Can I tell you what, do you want to know the synopsis of it? Or, like, are you one of those people, like, I don't know.
It won't have much of an effect on my enjoyment of the movie when I go and see it.
Okay.
So
yeah, me too.
How
does
it go?
Cool. It doesn't bother me if I know how things go. It makes no difference. Basically, what it is, it's a guy that he wakes up and he's on a train and he is like looking at this girl that he's never met or that he doesn't know, but he should know, and she's talking to him and he's just not sure what's up. And then he goes to the bathroom, looks in the mirror, and his face doesn't match what he knows himself to look like. And basically then it's just a few minutes go by, exactly 8 minutes go by or something. And he wakes up in this, like what seems to be like this, like chamber. Right. And then he's got like a military officer on like a video monitor that, that he's in contact with, and they're like running these protocols and just asking him to like say these protocol words kind of thing. And he's just like real mixed up. He doesn't know what's going on. Anyways, the bottom line is that, they developed this, some sort of machinery where they took a pilot that died. Okay. And, basically sent him to a parallel world in order to spy on a terrorist event that was about to happen. And they keep on sending him back. Now, what's strange about it is that, and this is what's weird for me, is that like after my accident, of which I was the only one flown away by helicopter. Okay. I used to tell my shrink many, many, many times, right? And, like, he's one of the last, trained by Dr. Ewan Cameron, very sharp, sharp, like, guy in his late 70s. He just gets a kick out of me. And he loves the whole Ionian logic stuff. He embraces it. I used to basically say, listen, I can tell, and this, I'm talking, like, 15 years ago, okay? I can tell that I've jumped into that in one world I died, and in this world, somehow I transferred over, right? And that's what they're basically doing with this supposedly dead guy. They put some sort of probes into his brain, and then they're activating him, and then putting him into what they call, I think, like the grid or the something, and making him basically someone else in a parallel version of the world. And He starts getting attached to certain things, and they keep on saying, don't get attached. You can't, it's a parallel world. There's millions of them. Like you can't change anything in this. You can't change anything in this world. We just want you to go find the person that, put the bomb there. So they keep on sending him back, and he only has 8 minutes, and he's running around doing whatever he wants, because he knows that he can do whatever he wants. He can shoot whoever he wants. He can do whatever he wants. Like, so, cause in 8 minutes, he goes back. But then he starts to manipulate stuff, and then he gets off at a certain spot and, like, saves this girl the person that he's basically taken over, because they've, I guess, mixed the two brains kind of thing. They found some brain tissue, I guess, after this this terrorist event, right? And they've merged those two brains together so that he could actually gain the last 8 minutes of that person that died in this train accident. And so he starts manipulating stuff within it, and then realizes that he can, even though when he finds out, when he comes back, he starts questioning them as to, like, what's going on. Finally, basically, they have to kind of tell him that he's dead, right? And he then basically decides and finds a way to go and live off into the parallel world. So he evades the terrorist attack on the train, doesn't die.
He's the parallel world that he's come to be in from...
He learns how to actually engage it and go on to live. So he lives on into the parallel world.
Wow.
The spy.
Which is where you are now.
The spy from the parallel world.
Wow.
Who died in the past one. And what's strange for me is that it's like a friend of mine, when I was in the accident, he broke his neck. Another one was also supposedly, all beat up and stuff like that. And I was the only one flown by helicopter. And then there was lost time.
Mm-hmm.
Not my lost time, because I was gone. But I just remember back. And then my mom talks about all this strange stuff. When I did get back to the house, they had to kind of watch me. And she said, you were just saying the strangest things. And I've questioned her on it, and she just won't talk about it.
She won't.
She said, you're just saying the strangest thing. I don't know if I was speaking another language. I don't know if it's just, she didn't say, but she wouldn't say it was gibberish. She just said, you were speaking very, very strange things. So I think, I do think, and another interesting thing is that, you probably know, I'm on, because of my accident, I was on disability. It's like the scientist that developed this new technique is this black guy that has a crutch that walks around with a crutch.
Okay, how does that apply to the movie? Oh, this is the guy that's in the movie?
Well, because it's just like the whole, the electronic, military-industrial complex making it happen.
Got it.
It's just like in Fringe, how we can see what's going on in Fringe, and that it's really all about the humans. You don't need all this machinery kind of thing, right? The machinery isn't necessary. So basically, I think they've superimposed both me. They took, Gyllenhaal, someone that's almost exactly my age, right? And as the operative, but then, the scientist that has been playing with this, and, I am a watcher. I am a social scientist. There's no two ways about it. I know that of myself. It's just the way I look at the world, right? When I came out of that accident, what did I first start doing? I started playing with hypnotism and trying to evoke what ION is, knowing what it was. I knew what I was doing, and I got spooked. And thought that it was a little more than, I was pretty young. It's just like, I should have been spooked, right? But I was trying to evoke it. Not by chance. It was what I was doing. I knew what I was doing. So, I don't know. I think it's me. I think they're talking about me. And Bob. Just like Fringe is so obviously that Peter Bishop is so obviously number one. It's Chad. So obvious.
Yeah. Yep.
But I could be, I could be wrong. I don't know. But it's regardless to any of us to watch the film. It's just you'll see. It's
you go, holy crap!
They're putting it right in front of us. They're telling us yeah, we get it. We're with you. We know what you know. We're gonna,
we know
like,
what's
kinda...
going on. And we're watching to see what's coming on.
I haven't even looked up to see who the producer is and that, what the connections are with that. But if any of Abrams, some of the people that are close to Abrams as well, but it wouldn't matter if it wasn't. And from what Ian's been saying, things have been spilling that it doesn't matter whether people hear it or not. Just the fact that we are talking about stuff, it's just because, like, you know, it's like the 100th monkey syndrome. It's like people are picking up on this, regardless.
And that kind of goes to, I'll forward this, I'll forward it to you as well, this commercial. It got forwarded to me. It's got the visual imagery includes everything, you know, from the spans of time. It's got, you know, Mayan pyramids and Egyptian stuff and Poseidon, the Greek goddess, and UFOs the symbology in it is this UFO helicopter flies over this brand new little car with this human being in it and picks it up off the road and flies off over the ocean and to deliver it onto this big opulent ship, yacht. And the name of the ship is Desire, you know, and then there's this, you know, totally billionaire rich guy with his, you know, lady friends in their bikinis on the deck and whatever, and Poseidon comes up and grabs the car and takes it off to some alien place, and it's amazing. It really, to stack up all of these nows in this commercial, that's how I saw it. All these potential nows that have this simultaneity of the bigger now that we don't see, or because we have this false concept of time going on, or at least we're moving past it, that we could actually engage in many now situations that are going on. I don't know. I'm jabbering. I'll send you the commercial.
Yes.
You know, I'm just saying that time is a... someone sent me a link to it. They thought it was a crack up.
Can you send me the link to those jazz musicians, too, that you're...
Yeah, I will. Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good. It came out of a movie, I guess. The synchronicity of how that showed up in my email, and while I was, and then went on to listen to Ion's first program. And how he talks about jazz music and stuff. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It comes from everywhere, the pattern, you know. And something that Chad had said some while ago, I think it was chatting to him on the phone, him and Angela, and I asked him, I says, what do you make of all this? You know, we see this, I'm seeing so much the anomalies and the patterns showing up and the synchronicities. I mean, synchronicity is a pattern recognition, or else it wouldn't be a synchronicity, right?
Yes.
He says, oh, it's great fun. Just, you know, you could get caught up in that being all that there is pattern recognition. And that's just kind of a tip of an iceberg sort of thing. I thought that was interesting comment that he had made.
Yeah, he's just a wealth of knowledge. Number one, for sure.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get a hold of him, but I don't know. I don't know what he's working on. I think he's a pretty busy guy. But I got a little chat from Angela just a few days ago or whatever. I was wondering if they'd moved over to the west side yet, or if they're still in the same place.
Yeah, I was just going to, well, there you go. I was just wondering if they were still there in your neck of the woods and Vancouver, is, you know.
Yeah, not sure. I've just been, yeah, just been focused on tactile creation development. I don't know.
Well, it's a moving, it's the interval between where you are and where you get to or something.
Well, yeah, that's, you know what, I learned what my symbols are, or what some of my, or what some of my gates or something, I don't know, symbols, gates, are, and I just realized that I've been keeping them forever, they're pieces of clothing. And it's something I noticed like years and years and years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Certain pieces of clothing, like especially some of the ones that I really invested, you know, like a lot of money in, like stuff for St. George, stuff from like special imports from London and stuff, stuff that I don't wear very often, but I wear for particular type events, or just I just choose them at certain times. They are it. I use them. It's like, because I'm one of those people, like, I wear the same thing all the time. Like, I wear, like, two pairs of jeans. I only wear black and gray T-shirts, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I got a few pretty plain kind of, you know, jackets, some, you know, some really nice, like, nice jackets, but they look plain, but they're, you know, they're expensive jackets kind of thing. But I'm, generally, I look the same all the time, right? But then I have these other kind of pieces, and they are pieces to me, right, that I pull out that are all very special it's funny at school, being in design school, it's just with all these students that are supposedly into design and stuff, and like, oh, you know, I'll walk in with just like a $1,300 custom jacket by the same guys that, you know, make stuff for like Angelina Jolie and Hugh Jackman and those guys, right? And
right.
My teacher will be like, I recognize that. Oh, I taught Keith Christensen. I could tell that was his style, right? And the teachers and, like, the director, she, like, even the day she goes, I saw you wearing that sweater. It's like that. What is that? I know that sweater. I was like, oh, it's a Don Casely or Joey Casely Hayford from London that I got back in the 90s. I go, it's like, you know, early, mid-90s. So they all notice, but it's funny. It's like all the students around me, they don't even get it. They don't see it.
They're just caught up in their world of trying
becoming dressmakers, not designers.
Maybe so. Yeah. And there's definitely a difference.
Yeah. There is. A big one. So. Because I always notice their stuff, right? I'm always watching everybody's piece of clothing, like everything. Oh, actually, one of the girls, she brought me a sample of. Did you guys know that the actual cologne that Napoleon wore is still in production?
Really? No.
Yeah.
No.
Really.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it is. I got a sample of it, and then I found some online. You can get it. It's actually pretty cheap because nobody knows about it. It's like made for. There's one that's for women. There's one for men, and there's one for both men and women. And it's called 4711 Ode to something or whatever. It's pretty crazy. So I'm gonna get a bottle of that. So I haven't been wearing. I'm really weird about. About colognes and stuff. I had like a rare Chanel for men that I had for years and years, and I don't know, all these kind of trendy whatever stuff that come out. Like.
The only perfume that I ever wore, and I don't wear perfume, well, maybe twice a year or something, I might dab some on. But the only perfume that I ever wore consistently was Coco by Chanel.
Yeah, just absolutely, yeah.
And that was, I don't know, I think in my 30s, early 40s, mid 40s maybe. And even then I didn't wear it every day because it was I don't know.
No, me neither. Yeah, and the other scent that got me that I think has kind of disappeared, might have to jump to a parallel world to go get it, but Donna Karan came out with this, an antiperspirant stick. Only a woman would come up with this just to make it real simple for a guy to smell the way that she wants him to smell, right? It's hilarious. that's so brilliant.
Is brilliant.
But it was like this, like an antiperspirant, but very pungent, you know what I mean? Just your average stick. In the power of it was musky, but it wasn't a musky smell. Okay? Cologne smell, and it was just super powerful, and you just like put that on, and it's like you're wearing cologne, but you're not wearing cologne, you're wearing antiperspirant. It was awesome. I went back to try and get it, and it was a few years later, and it was just not around anymore. And maybe it's probably, you'd probably find it down south where you are, but there's not, there's a department store that's would be kind of like, I guess, your guys'
Lord Taylor's or
what's in some of the higher places. Higher than that. More like Neiman Marcus type.
Lord Taylor's, Texas.
That kind of thing. Well, yeah, there's a place called Holt Renfrew's in Canada. Who knows? It might even be in America somewhere by now. Who knows? They got a lot of.
And the other perfume that I wore when I was really young, I wore it for a couple of years, I think, until it kind of came all gone, was White Shoulders. It's really going back in the day. It was nice enough, but I never bought it myself. I think it was a gift. That's why I wore it, now that I think about it. So the spiders have arrived for spring here in Michigan. We've gotten tons of rain and warmer weather finally. It's been actually came up to the 60-degree mark today and yesterday. It's been cold and wet and windy and rainy and stormy, everything.
I know. You guys have been living in what you guys think Canada is.
Yeah.
I've been thinking of
you and Chad and Sasha and Angela and Allison and I can think who's all back up in those neck of the woods. A few other people, Ashley and Duffy, are up there. I think they're in Seattle or Portland. I'm not sure exactly where they're at. But, yeah, the northwest of the rain of it all. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay. It's been a long spring, wetness of springtime season going on here. Because we're, end of April, and the grass is, and I'm quite a bit north. The grass is just starting to get green in the last couple of days. I mean, if we would get a bit of sunshine, it'd be green. But like the spring flowers are barely popping up in the ground, and this is a very late coming on of the colors of spring. Anyway.
So, is it spring? When is spring? What's that?
First day of spring was sometime in March, I think. The first day of spring comes about mid-March, I recollect. Mm-hmm. And then the springtime is, April and May, and then the first day of summer comes along mid-June. Somewhere like that. I don't know. I don't know why. Never mind about the calendar. I'm just noticing. What I am noticing, all the animals have arrived and the birds, and that's really fun. And the eagles are flying in the sky again. And and the owls are, I have an owl that's hooting every night. Can't see him. I'm sure he's back in the woods, but he's here again. He was here last year.
Huh.
We have a
I found a feather yesterday afternoon, right near the doorway of entering school. I can't. That was interesting. Almost completely white, just the tiniest tip of it was just slightly gray.
Could be dried blood on it. That grayness of it.
Yeah, it just, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think I've seen many white feathers recently anyway. I'm ready for my box of angel feathers that's sealed to show up. I mean, for me to line up with it, that'll be quite the moment. It'd be a fun moment for sure. Did you listen? You listened to Cashflow today, did you not? You did?
Yes. Yeah, I think I caught it all.
Okay.
Yeah, it was working. Yeah, I did. I caught the whole thing. I was working
okay.
The whole time.
At the end of the, towards the end of the third hour, someone asked or had sent in a message about, is there a second moon behind the one we see? And the answer was yes. And
how far though?
How far behind the our moon? Good question. Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. And what was I going to say?
Just wordy words with MP. You got to be hit. Like,
well,
it's one of the reasons why I haven't
so
gotten
much
a reading.
That question.
I don't want to waste my money. It's just like I haven't thought of a good enough question yet, and I haven't been able to get away from separation.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question. What factors am I to consider as I engage this picture, this card of symbols, this angel language, Godspeed, the SS Hirona, RNA drops, miraculous staircase, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the world as I know it. What factors am I to consider as I engage this?
What?
That's my question.
What, though? You're still saying what?
Oh, well, oh, gosh, yeah. Are there factors that I am to consider? Oh, how do you get there? Are there? Are there factors to consider? To go back, see now this question.
Should I consider? Should I consider these factors?
Yeah, woulda, shoulda, coulda. What factors shoulda, woulda, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
To go back, I'm going to listen to the cash flow because it seemed to me that Bob asked a question in reference following this second moon behind our moon question that he read, or somebody called in and asked, I can't remember, and it was like at 35 minutes into the third hour. So Bob comes up with the way to ask the question without any degrees of separation, and I think I have to go back and listen to it. Because it seemed to me he didn't, he would not have used who, what, where, when, and who, what, where, when, why, how.
Well, I guess
you're are there or does is there or are there is there are there factors I'm to consider. That's the question, and then you can just fill in the blank from there, or one of the ways of asking without the degree of separation.
Well, I don't know. He'll embrace people that use a degree of separation if he likes their place of asking, right?
Right.
At times, so got to get into that place.
Right.
I'm playing a little. I'm developing some little games with boxes. I'm taking it to another level. That I know of. Like with the whole idea about putting notes in a box
uh-huh.
to manifest. Well, I want to take it a step further. That's about as far as I want to comment on it.
Okay.
So far.
That's a great idea. I think that would go well. I think it would do well.
Yeah. Wow. Is there anyone else? Is anyone else on the line? Like,
I don't know. Is there anyone here?
I'm listening, but just listening.
Who is this?
Bruce.
Bruce. Hey. Hi.
How's it going?
How you doing?
Good. Thanks.
Good. Good.
Bruce, where are you from again?
I'm in Chicago, but from South Africa.
Ah. Have we ever spoken before?
I do not think we have spoken, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm MJ.
Hey, MJ. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Tina, I think you have you did respond to the on the Yahoo groups. I was the one that posted that that commercial, the Kia commercial.
Huh.
Yeah, that's where it came. I was trying to, but where did I see? I just saw it today or last night. I knew it came through the chip body, you know, the computer.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was quite the visual imagery in that commercial. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, the first
where
time
they get
kind
this
of saw it, it was like, just very interesting, like you, like even the way you, I think, was it you that explained that it was all in the same timeline, past, present, future, all happening at once, you know, going through portals, going, you know, it's just an interesting watch.
Yeah, that's what I got from it, yeah. So I'm glad you showed up and are here and came into the, what we have jokingly have called this the Gate of Tell here after the Cash Flow Show.
Yeah.
So how long have you been, did you just get here? You've been listening for a while, Bruce?
I've been calling in and coming in and coming out because I was actually waiting for someone. I thought I'm looking after someone's place, and there is this a lady, she's one of these psychic surgeons that are, she's just coming to stay here for 3 days. So I'm just going to be here while she's here. So I thought she was arriving today, but I just realized that she's only coming tomorrow after speaking with someone. So that's why I kept on going in and out.
Okay. So psychic surgeon, is that what you said? Is that what she does?
Yeah, that's her field. I mean, I think she's works very closely with, I think she's like the, works very closely with this guy named Alex Orbito in the Philippines. I don't know if you know who Alex Orbito is, but
does it ring a bell recently? Anyway,
yeah. Well, that's what they
so
do.
So she's kind of like a healer, if you will, or
yeah. That's the only way that I could put it. I know that Ian's got a different view when it comes to healers, I suppose.
Right, that's why I said it the way I did, but I, you know.
Yeah, but
But hey, that's cool for her, you know. If,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, you know,
she's,
myself
she's in her
too.
Powers,
I mean,
doing her thing.
You know, I'm still trying to understand a lot. You know, with you know, getting to know Ion and his ways. You know, it's funny too that MJ was talking about an experience that he was talking about source code, and I think if I'm, you can correct me if I'm wrong, MJ, if you said that you felt that you had died and entered and gone into a parallel world that you are in now.
Well, actually, when I first, yeah, when I first came on the, like, started just engaging within the tailgate, that's what Ion said I was to begin with.
Oh, okay. No, I had a very interesting experience long, long time ago with when I was about 17 years old. I had I took LSD and had a very crazy experience, and I actually thought that being in the hospital, I was like, okay, I actually was in this thought that I had died and gone into a parallel universe somehow.
It's a very,
strange
very
event
possible.
That happened during that time. Pardon?
It's very, very possible. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, yes. There were strange events that were happening at that time, and you know, during this whole process, while I was still trying to adjust to whatever was going on, the first thing I heard in the hospital bed was this guy completely saying, over and over again, today is a good day to die. Today is a good day to die. He kept on saying this to me, and I got to know this guy over a course of like 2 days, and he knew stuff about me that I wouldn't, you know, even, I never told him anything. He knew stuff about me that I just don't tell anyone. He knew stuff that I was going to do before I even did it. And the strange thing was, too, during that same course of time that this was taking place, there was like this African gentleman at the very end of one of these hospital beds, and when he was given food, he would come up and offer this guy this food. I don't know if I'm looking at it into it too much, but I just noticed these things that were happening, and I was like, whoa, this is like weird, and why? I was just still trying to question myself, what's going on, you know, like what happened to me? So, yeah.
Huh.
Was this,
yeah, it's possible.
The
went
guy
into
that was saying that to you, was he like in a hospital bed in the same room as you?
He was actually, he was directly seated, he was directly next to me, but at the time he was saying this, he was looking out the window, which was a bit further down, and he just kept on repeating this over and over again, and I was like, whoa, this is like really starting to freak me out. So, and then he started talking to me about, I don't know, he started talking to me about, you know, stuff like aliens and all this other stuff. And I'm like, wow, you just don't normally meet a guy that just starts, you know, opening up about all this different information. He did leave me with a verse, which was from the, I think it's the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. And it's, I never forgot what he told me, but it's, the moving finger writes, having writ moves on, nor all the piety or wit can henceforth erase. He left me with that. He wrote it down for me.
Can you repeat that again, please?
Yes. The moving finger writes, having writ moves on, nor all the piety or wit can henceforth erase.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, but after that experience, I mean, weird things just like just started falling into, or I don't know if they were falling into place, but people would just come up to me out of nowhere. And I remember being at a bar with some friends, and next thing this gentleman taps me on the shoulder and asks to speak to me, and I say, okay. And he was a little bit, seemed a little bit drunk and out of it, but he bought me a beer. He looked at me and he said, what are you doing? And he said, like, well, I mean, what do you mean, what am I doing? And he would like point to my friends at that time, and he'd say, well, why are you with those people? And he's like, he says, you've got to make a choice. I mean, you know, and I'm like, what do you mean? He says, well, you're a good person. And he just started telling me things like, I'm going to tell you to go to this place. You're going to go there. And when you go to this place, they will open up a door for you. And he says, when you see me, say hello. And I said, okay, sure. So I took it to heart, and he sent me, first of all, to a spiritualist center. And I went there, and I was attending that place for about 10 years, and it did open up a door to other avenues of thought and thinking and spiritual experiences, but I never ever saw this guy during the time that I had been attending that spiritualist center. And I did get into other forms of healing, whether it was meditation or mediation, in Ion's words. So just some interesting stuff that happened that changed my life, really, like 180 degrees.
Well, you had the ears to hear and the eyes to see, seems like.
Yeah. So, still just trying to, you know, figure out things on a different scale, because obviously Ion comes from a different mode of thought, so a lot of my thoughts have been, you know, have been challenged, and so sometimes I just sit here and I think, okay, what's next?
No, you've definitely stumbled onto something. You're into something big. That's all I can tell you. It's huge. I don't know how long you've been following Ion, but my suggestion would be to go to Bob's five body timeline and listen to as many of the long, anywhere from like 4 hour to 10-12 hour archives. I think some of them, like basically everything has been, like most stuff has been explained. If you want to get personal, you need to get a private reading.
Oh yeah, I actually have personally engaged with Ion.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, so
how'd you?
Are you on the
forum at this time?
Yes.
Have you posted anything?
I do post like some stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff was initially about, I think, RNA. I'm trying to think, who am I under? It's my name backwards. So I'm under Ekerb. So some of them aren't like such, you know, important posts, but it's just stuff that I'm just trying to find answers to.
Right. I don't know about the five body timeline. Don't you have to? But you have listened back in archives much?
I've been listening to. Yes, I have listened to a lot of the archives. My main interest was the RNA, and just trying to, you know, getting information about RNA is like trying to squeeze a lemon from an orange, I suppose. But it's
well, like Bart says, you know, what are you waiting for? Just get the damn drops. I think he tweeted the other day.
I've been engaging. So
good.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, taking them and kind of seeing what happens during that process. I mean, I have noticed one or two different things, but still just kind of being objective and just letting it do what it's meant to do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just keep on taking them, and I'll bet you at some point it's just going to smack you upside the back of the head, and it'll be really clear what it's doing.
Yeah. I have had the, you know, I wouldn't call it, like I said, I wouldn't call it bliss. I feel like I've had moments of bliss through other means, but it's more like being kind of in a state of, I'm not going to say, like, I know what it's like to be stoned, you know, so I could say it's like having this kind of awareness, but kind of functional. That's the only way that I could describe it.
Yes, it's like it kind of stems from the central nervous system. It's like it's a certain type of, an awareness or a highness, but it's not the body. It's the central nervous system almost.
Yeah, it's a very strange experience. I mean, I have had the other contrasting experiences, which have not been, it's happened about two or three times, which were pretty, you know, I had to kind of get my body into I had to calm myself down in a sense. I was not, you know, it felt like what was like more like an anxiety or some sort of panic attack. But it felt like at one stage that I was going like so fast, it was just a very, another unfamiliar feeling. So it was like my body was trying to catch up with whatever information was what was being put into my body. That's the only way I could describe it.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But hey, guys, I've got to go. Bruce, it's like I'd love to be able to stay and chat, but I got I got an engagement that I got to get to. But
MJ, yeah. We'll chat again soon.
Yeah, for sure. So you guys have a nice evening.
You too. Keep on.
Alrighty.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Got wind of this Yahoo group. I've never been in a Yahoo online group ever, so I'm trying to figure out how to navigate the group site thing, you know, and figured out how to post a comment to someone else's comment this afternoon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm first time on there also, so you know. I kind of, you know, all these different groups and, you know, invitations to join, but I thought, you know, the lady, Jill, who had started the group, I do know her personally, so I thought I would join. And it would be a good thing just to get other people's, I suppose it's like dupes. A lot of people don't respond on dupes, though. I think they just kind of read it more than responding.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of input on the dupes these days.
Yes.
I'm not sure why. It is what it is. A bit here or there. You know, back in when it first showed up, there was a gang of us, I guess, that found ourselves having not wanting to leave, you know. It was a pretty amazing span of time for me anyway. I mean, I was just so jazzed in the engagement of it all that literally experienced a no time sense of being.
Yes.
I mean, I'd log in and the next thing I'd know it'd be like 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'd been on there for hours, you know, back and forth and it was just, and that was for quite a while. And yet at the same time, I mean, I've had that sense of kind of days would go by and I'd kind of, show back up in my house and think, what day is it? You know, and I'd be like, wait a minute, what is today? And I just had no idea what day of the week it was or wondering if I'd fed my dog, and apparently I had, and, you know, stuff was getting done, and I'm, you know, it's really been quite a fun time at any rate.
I'm sure you were in the state of no mind, but
yeah.
you're still functioning.
yeah, apparently so. During the weekday I'm here by myself, or well, I can't even really say that because there's all kinds of activity that comes around here, but physically speaking my partner is a couple hours away during the week and whatever, and so I mean all of a sudden it'd be like Friday. And I'd be like, well, I guess I, you know, did stuff. Things are done. The garden's growing great. It's all, you know, lawn's been mowed, this and that. You know, there's food in the refrigerator. And I think back on it and go, my, oh, my. Yeah. But it's been, I'm showed up at the Cash Flow radio show about maybe 6 months or a year before, just prior to Ion showing up, and was listening to Bob and James banter it about for a good year. And they're about, I don't even know what they were talking, what Bob was talking about back then, you know?
Yeah.
But it was funny, and sometimes it was irritating, and sometimes it was like, it just, you know, flew over my head, and you know, and here I am now.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I do understand, too. I mean, I came across the Cash Flow, I think, was probably last year, near the end of last year.
End of 2009?
2010.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was kind of, when I first listened to it, I even told, when I first spoke to Bob when I was getting my private read, I thought I was listening to like a Mad Hatter Tea Party, kind of like entered Alice in Wonderland kind of style. Because, I mean, seriously, some things that were being talked about and some people that were coming on, I was like, wow, is this like a whole lot of like crazy people coming on and just like saying their thing? And then I don't know what happened. Suddenly, I think I had heard something. I clicked on the Cash Flow show, and I think it was ending, and it was like RNA drops, buy them, don't buy them. And I'm like thinking, wait, what are these? And I kind of like was looking up what are RNA drops, and I'm like, okay, this is good. I want to try these. In my head, I'm like, I've got to try these. And then that's when I phoned and spoke to Matt and what he had been through, and then I kind of resonated with what he had been through. Because it felt like something that had been kind of going through at the same time. So
yeah.
That's how I got kind of introduced to the RNA drops. And so that's my journey and introduction to it.
Yeah. Well, how does Jill come into the scene then? You say you know her personally. She's there in South Africa as well?
No. Because I'm in Chicago. Jill lives in another state, but I actually met her a few years back. I was kind of told that I should go to an event called the Eden event, and kind of was like reluctant about it. I don't know what it was about, but it's all about this one gentleman who basically interacts supposedly with Archangel Michael, I think, and kind of from there, I met her there, and yeah, just stayed in contact.
Yeah, I had made it to the Eden event link yet, because I just showed up on the Yahoo group.
It's very, very interesting. I mean, the experience, I really did enjoy
the
experience.
Where does it take place at?
It's in a different state each year, and I think this year it's going to be in Arkansas. I'm not sure, but it's quite an interesting event. I mean, whoever is going there first time, you get what they call is gathered, and you get your color. You got to read what like your color is, which is your personality traits and everything. And spiritual traits, and I was very reluctant to go for some, I don't know why, and it was one day before the actual decision that I had a dream where this funny enough, it was a strange, it was like I had in this dream whatever the figure of how would I suppose be Jesus appeared and came to me and touched me on the back, and he was like glowing and blue and stuff like that, and I kind of like when he touched me on my back, which was in the same alignment with my heart, I kind of had this very emotional but joyful emotion. I don't know how to describe it. And I don't know, something just told me, okay, go to the event. So I did.
And you're glad you did, because, well, first you met a new friend, Jill,
yes,
that you resonated with. A lot of people there? Was it the
yes,
thousands or just a few hundred?
There were
probably,
I think there were probably between, if I can recall, maybe 200 to 300 people.
That's a big gathering. That's a nice size gathering.
Yeah, and it's a very nice. And then you do this, you sit in a, it's like a, almost, I think it's like a sacred geometry type grid that you sit in at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing that people do at the end. It's just I don't know too much about it, but there is a very interesting energy, and I think a lot of people resonate with it. But just the people that are of all the like minds coming together and actually just experience that vibe.
With what? This like-mindedness that you experienced there, what kind of people were, what was the vibration of it? Was it just this real open spiritualness of?
Yes, that's what I would think. It's like people obviously open, the openness to spirituality and just from all different, whether it's healing modalities or whether they're into maybe different spiritual traditions. It was just that interconnectedness of, you know, kind of people thinking on that level, you know.
That did you have a sense that folks were having a sense that there's something going on and we're not quite sure what's going on, but something's going on? And we can come together and resonate, I don't know, at a higher vibration and just be cool with it? Was there any of that?
I think yes. It was like coming togetherness and that resonating and that, like you said, that higher, whether it's a higher vibration. I would say definitely yes.
I mean, having listened to whatever you've heard about Ion. I mean, you had made a comment early on that you are overlaying many concepts in your own mind of and perceptions and, I don't know, conditioning. If you stay with it for any point of time, what I've noticed with folks is they either go, oh, there's some, this is something, now this is really something, and they begin that overlaying process and getting a little clearer about who you are and what you are and all of that. I forgot my point. Sorry.
It's okay. But I can't tell you on this, like the overlaying thing and the thing. I mean, I was everything. Let's say that I was doing, whether it is, let's say, on a nutritional level, whether it was on a physical level. When I say physical level, let's say of some sort of physical training,
mm-hmm.
it was all challenged because what I thought was the correct way is not necessarily true. So I think
yeah.
I've been challenged in every aspect of what physical training is, of what nutrition is. And so
right.
it's taken everything, let's say that I...
And what spirituality is.
Yeah, so it's taken everything and kind of just like thrown it in my face and say, oh, sorry, think again of what it is. And now
yeah.
it's like, you go figure it out. You go figure it out. And I'm like, I'm sitting here and I'm like thinking to myself, well, how can I figure this out? You know, because this is what I had built my I'm going to even say belief systems on, thinking that if you follow the healthiest way, if you do it the correct way, that this is the way, and you're going to be healthy.
My path, I'm on my path. I'm on my journey of getting somewhere and being good and right and loving and, you know,
I got slapped in the face with that, with a great answer. Like you say, so you think it's this way. So here we go. Let's take it all away from you now. Now I try to see where it comes. And I kept on like saying, okay, it's beyond this. Emotion and mind. I kept on getting emotion and mind. We got, you know, the emotions that we put into things and our mind. So it's obviously getting out of the mind. And yes, there are many ways, I think, to get out of the mind. But the mind seems to always, you know, kind of want to take control again. So...
You can't, and we were talking earlier, and I don't know, the good part of it wasn't recorded this evening at the very beginning of Tailgate, but we were talking about the mind and the brain and how do you, and the effect of, does RNA affect the mind? That was a question that came into cash flow today in the first hour. And Ion's answer was no. Now, Bob and didn't squeeze that. He didn't ask, what do you mean, the mind? But he had apparently had other conversations about the mind and the brain.
Yes.
However, RNA drops affects the brain. And we went over this again in Tailgate when Bob showed up. I don't think I wrote it down to go back and listen to it. But the mind, other than that, the mind, our mind's original job was just to monitor, was the monitoring of the body, the autonomic responses of the body. Like the mind says, breathe, the heart pumps, all of those functions that go on automatically, you don't think about them.
Yeah.
Until we assigned it all this other job of evaluating, discerning, reading and all this other stuff that our minds do now, and undoing, you can't undo what already is. So overlaying and getting out of your mind, I don't get anywhere with that. As Ian says, you know, never mind, you got to get out of your mind. I just don't opine much about things these days. I think about it a lot, and then I think about things all the time because you can't stop your mind from thinking. You know, that inner chatter that goes on?
Yes, I do. But that inner chatter, is it the mind doing the chattering?
Or is it the conditioning that you've conditioned your mind to do? Or have trained and laid these pathways within your brain that now just follow these pathways that are there that's been laid down, you know, since you took your first breath, I guess, or before, or whatever, you know, because the brain, as you use the brain and develop these synapses, things within the structure of the brain, it lays these pathways, and so that's how the brain develops. Talk about a rabbit hole.
Yeah. First of all, you've got a thought that comes in. So where is that thought first of all coming from? Is it coming from the mind, or where in essence is that thought coming from? So the mind is choosing the what you want to think. I don't know if that makes sense.
Or are you choosing what to think? Are you choosing the thought that's coming in?
But if you say, if I am choosing, then who is you? Are you referring to you as the mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, an aspect of me. I wouldn't say that I am my mind, although my mind, my thoughts, my thinking are an aspect of who I am, as my force field, my feelings that are contained within my force field. Those are mine. And I can now choose to engage whatever feeling or emotion that I desire to engage at any moment, in any situation. Because I've gotten my emotions contained within my force field, rather than, say, wearing your emotions on your sleeve, if you will. Or which is, for me, coming from where I came from, is a very powerful place to be. Because now I've got my container contained, my emotions contained in my force field. That was a big move for me back a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, whatever, last summer probably, is getting that whole power and authority thing straightened out in my world. And a big part of it was getting my emotional field contained, or differentiating my inner kingdom, my middle kingdom, and my outer kingdom.
Okay, when it comes to emotion, are we supposed to, like, okay, I don't know what Ian's thoughts on this, you know, whether there's no positive, there's no really no positive, no negative. So with emotion, is that on the same level? Should we have emotion, or is it going beyond emotion?
Oh no, yeah, have it all. You can't uncreate what is. So all that you are is. So engage it all. But you don't have to engage all of it all of the time and be spewing off, you know, and whatever. Like the way I see emotions is they're kind of on they're just kind of on a maybe a scale or they're not really good emotions or bad emotions, but you can certainly measure on a frequency meter. Not sure that's the right name for that equipment, but you can measure your emotions on a meter that picks up the frequency resonance of an emotion of happy, an emotion of sad, of an emotion of anxiety or anger, hatred, and so on, right?
Yes.
And none of them are, and one emotion isn't better than another, from where I come from now. They just are.
Yes.
And there are situations where it's appropriate, for lack of a better word, to emote some, you know, anger, you know, or distaste or irritation or annoyance or whatever, right? Or happy or joy or ecstasy, whatever it is. And to whatever degree you decide you want to bring forth, because every emotion also you can experience varying degrees of just that one emotion or all of your emotions. I mean, I can be a little bit angry, and I could be, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs of anger, right?
Yeah.
Or I can be happy or ecstatically happy, overjoyed and blissed out. So they're all there, so you get to choose how you want to engage what is yours on your emotional, in your emotional field.
Yes.
Now, certainly, if you're, because joy is my fastest path to what is, I have a tendency these days to be experiencing emotions that are synonymous with joy and bliss, happy to varying degrees.
Yes. So there is that, I'm sure you may have heard it, I'm not sure, but there's a story of where the disciple goes to his master and says, you know, master, tell me what it is like to be enlightened. He says, well, before enlightenment, I was depressed, and after enlightenment, I continue to be depressed. So could it be kind of likened to that emotion is always there, but maybe it's the way we kind of react to it? In terms of how we are affected by it.
Well, I don't know about, yeah. I don't know about enlightenment. But
I'm just likening it to emotion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I can speak to you about depression.
Yes.
Okay, because I've experienced depression. And these days, whether I experienced depression or not, it's more like I don't really notice whether or not I'm engaging in a depression situation or being depressed. Because I'll have a day or a period of time where I just feel a little out of sorts or kind of ho-hum or something, whatever. But even what my noticing is I don't pay too much attention to it. But if I do notice it, like, oh, today's, you know, I'm feeling a little out of sorts. I just get busy knowing what shifts that for me. So then my perspective shifts of what it is that's going on in my little world here.
Yes.
And there's little things that I do that I know make me feel good. Make me, you know, just, you know, shift the energy flow that I've been, you know, smiling or having a laugh or a chuckle, or just all of a sudden this physical sensation rushes through my body, all kind of tingling, and it just, I get a little giddy, like.
Yes.
Now I believe that's become more so since I started taking these RNA drops on a regular on and off all day sort of thing. I catch this giddy thing going on in me, and it's a good thing people aren't watching me so much. They probably think I should, you know, check myself in, because all of a sudden I'm like just smiling from ear to ear, and you know, start I don't know, I turn music on and dance around the house or whatever, just for fun, you know?
Yes.
But I think it's part of this ascendingness thing that's going on. Because if you listen to Ion enough, you'll come to know that when you get so busy being happy, you ain't gonna notice nothing about these cares of life, about these emotions or enlightenment. I mean, there isn't a goal. You're never gonna get it done. You're never gonna get there, and you're never gonna get it wrong. So just get busy getting happy and happy, and the cares of life grow strangely dim.
Yes.
Said that on the radio show today. There is something to that. And when you shift your focus or what you're putting your attention on, then all of a sudden that which you're putting your attention on, like, I don't know, maybe an issue in a relationship or something, it tends to kind of go by the wayside or takes a shift in and of itself and be changes. It's made my days fun.
Yes.
And something else too, and Bob will say this, and maybe others as well. I don't know, but I'm going to say it. Kind of all waxes and wanes, Bruce.
Yes.
And coming into one's power and acknowledging that, A, you do have a non-physical, and the non-physical that is you is more than the physicalness that is you. That's, wrap your head around that one. I'm like, okay, whatever, you know. So, okay, there's a statement. What do you want me to do with it? Can't prove it, can't not prove it, but I'll go with it. Sure beats the heck out of putting my power in a box or up in a cloud or, you know, giving it to some God outside of me, which I had let go of years and years and years ago when I not so much turned my back on, well, it turned away from what we call religion, but became, you know, a little more, you know, started pursuing a spiritualness of what maybe is going on, you know?
Yes.
And that doesn't really work. That didn't really work so much either. But it did get me to where I am here today. So I don't ever not what's been. Because I see it all just kind of stepping stones that I've put in front of me to put my foot on for my next step on the path. And whatever stepping stone I've put there. So can't get it wrong. It leads you where you are today. In your travels of and your, you know, life.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, you're on a tailgate talking to, you don't even know who, having engaging RNA drops and, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that? And you aligned and brought this knowingness that Ion lays out, that you're God. You create everything. You've created everything. And you'll continue to create everything. And everything that you've ever experienced, will ever experience, is your creation. So that's
so
pretty huge.
So do you think that we are, that most people, they are unconsciously creating, and are we getting back to a place of consciously creating.
Mm-hmm. It's like they've got the default button pushed.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And do you like music? Do you listen to music or?
I seem to resonate with the older music.
Cool.
As opposed to the music.
What's going on
today? The
cool
beat. I mean, there's a music that has the cool beat, but then the older music seems to have more. I don't know. I'm just more connected to it.
Yeah, there's an old Sam Cooke song. Trying to think of the title of it.
Sam Cooke is awesome.
Yeah, Getting Back to God. Let's Get Back to God, I think. Something along, if you Googled it, YouTubed it. It's a YouTube thing. That's what's going on. I mean, it's written in scripture and other books of antiquity and all of that, all through the ages and so on, that we're coming to this place where we are coming into our power and being the God that we are. We just haven't known it. We've been, the veil is thinning and all of that stuff. I don't know how much you've heard or what you've not heard, but if you view the human condition of kind of being sequestered and placing, the whole religious dogma that God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, whatever is God outside of you, that's all going away. That has disappeared. It is gone. And what you see going on and what I experience in my world is that I more and more come to the knowing that and begin to embrace, okay, I'm a God and I create everything that I experience.
Yeah.
So that being so, I now prefer to create joy as my fastest path to what is in my world. And I can determine what that joy is in many different degrees. I mean, this conversation is right there in joy,
Yes.
I resonate a lot with the music.
Yes. So basically,
all different genres.
Yes. So basically, it comes down to really what a lot of these, I'm just going to say, masters, whatever, have taught is that it's coming down to awareness, because without awareness, one would have to have a keen sense of awareness with, in what we create. So with our words that come out of our mouth as we speak, that's
yep.
what we create.
Yep, yep.
So, and that's one thing that I'm definitely trying to pay a lot of attention to is that, wow, so as I speak, this vibration is creating. And so now, like, even when some people speak to me and I see the words that are coming out their mouth, it makes me aware, me want to be more aware of myself and what I say, because I think as these words are coming out these people's mouth, and then I focus on that, I'm thinking, oh, so they set them up, they are setting themselves up for this. And I've been caught in that trap many a times. As
oh,
sure
yeah.
everyone has been.
oh yeah, like, oh boy, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that awareness or that noticing, as I, it's just kind of the word that always shows up for me out of my mouth is noticing. And when I notice, when I hear other another individual describing what's going on in their world. And it's all, well, this and well, that and drama, 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 and blah, you know. And I think to myself, oh, you shouldn't be saying that. You tell you have no idea what it is you're doing. Most people don't. They don't, you know.
Yeah.
And I've awaringly choose more and more these days to only allow that which I desire to come out of my mouth.
Yes.
And in even just, you know, in conversation, I've noticed over the past year that I don't engage much with folks that are caught up in the 6 degrees of separation and have and are in their struggles.
Yes.
Because to engage in that, it gets to hurt in my ears.
Yes.
And I just I just won't have it, because I do know that it's not my job to straighten them out.
Yes.
Even when I have tried to say what we're talking about, some they can't hear it. They're not there. They are where they are. I love them dearly. I care for them. These are my family members. These are the people I care about dearly. And yet I continue to care about them and hold them in regard, you know, it just hold them in my heart and know that they are where they are. And it's not my job to enlighten them, you know, because they don't hear it. It falls on deaf ears. And so it is what it, and it makes for my reality and my experience of living my life a pleasure. Because I don't find myself getting caught up and dragged back to where I once was that I no longer am and no longer desire to be.
Definitely.
And that's just a good day, you know. it's just good day. And, you know, another song comes to mind. I think it was Queen, Keep Good Company. And I'll give a listen to that song, because you do, when you get ionized, and you are and have been ionized,
yes.
Keeping good company makes for a good day.
Yes.
And I mean, there was used to be a time where it's like, you know, what will people think? I mean, these are my family. These are my people. This is, you know, and they're not going to love me anymore. They're going to think I'm mad. They're going to think all of this. And now it's like I don't even go there anymore. It's not just not my job. And most people these days that I still do engage with, they know. They know I'm not going to have it. They get to griping about the crap that they've got themselves in, And I was like, you know, yeah, okay, same shit, different day. So how's the weather in your neck of the woods? You know? I mean, and I find, too, that, you know, most times the conversations don't go on for too long either.
Yes.
But, and that's okay, too, because then I can just go do and be whatever I'm doing. Thank goodness I have my little dog, because I keep good company with Jake and I.
That's awesome. Yeah, dogs are amazing.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking after my friend's dog at the moment too while she's away, so that dog is one of the most, I don't know how to even describe it. It's like one of the most emotional characters I have ever seen. Just the strangest personality that I've ever come across in a dog for a long time. But
your friend's dog?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and
yeah.
He's very protective of me when I'm in his presence, and he if my wife were to come close to me, he will gap himself between us and then jump up to me, or he will like kind of turn around and kind of not bite her, but just like nip in the air, like saying stay away. It's the strangest
thing
I've.
He's mine. He's all mine.
I promise you, I've never. It's pretty wild to see. And every time she comes near me, he'll like make a strange sound and then put his head right. But he will actually with his head pull us apart.
That's funny. Jake will do that with my partner and I. He loves us both, you know. But then, like when we're together, like. On weekends, usually, Jake can't get enough of John when John's around, and he kind of like just kind of doesn't really ignore me or anything, because I mean he's just all about John. He hasn't seen John in 5 days or 4 days or three or whatever it is, you know. But then you know we'll climb into bed for the night, and Jake thinks he's going to lay right between us. Or if we embrace, you know, big hug and kiss or whatever, Jake starts barking and, you know, it's like, I don't think it's about John and I coming together as it is for Jake anyways. He's like, hey, what about me? I want some of that, you know, love me, pet me, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
He's a character dog.
But now Aya says that dogs are purely non-physical, right, if I'm correct?
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to also understand that concept of a dog being totally non-physical. Because then, okay, I know, yes, we are more non-physical than physical, but it's still, we do have a physical component. But if you see a dog and you touch a dog, it's still what feels like a physical component. So I'm trying to understand that.
Good luck with that. when you get there, let me know what you figure out.
I'm thinking that if we are more non-physical, that first of all, when we were to even try and touch an animal that is non-physical, my concept of thinking would be that, okay, my hand's going to go right through the dog. And it's going to be a mixture two energies kind of just flowing through each other. So, yeah, when I try to figure that one out.
Well, and I, you know, and as we overlay these new thoughts, right, this new way that we've never been thought about as how to perceive our environment and what's in it. I mean,
what I have in my mind of physical, Jake being physical. I mean, he's a dog, you know. I pet him, I bathe him, I brush him, I feed him, I pick up his poop in the yard. He, you know, he chases the birds and you know, and carries rocks around in his mouth for me and all of this stuff. He's physical. He physically is here, and yet he can walk through the glass door to go outside and back in, you know, and I've seen that. I know that occurred.
Yeah.
And like, you know, all of a sudden, I've only had an awareness, great word, of Jake having done it after the fact because he was outside. And I know that I didn't, and I know that I hadn't let him out. I know that. Because I went to, I don't know, I had woken up from a nap or something, whatever, and I think, well, you know, hey, Jake, let's go for a walk. And I'm looking, I'm calling him, I'm looking, where did he go? Where is he? I couldn't find him in the house. And I'm in a little two-bedroom bungalow here, you know? And he was nowhere to be found in the house. He hadn't crawled under a bed. He wasn't hiding in the utility room. He wasn't anywhere inside the house. And I'm like, where did he go? I'm calling him. And then I look over the sliding glass door, and he's sitting outside. And I'm like, what the fuck? How'd you get out there? You know? I was, it was like, okay. Okay, fine. We'll go for a walk now.
Yeah.
So I would have to say that however it is that this reality is that I've constructed and you've constructed is a limited reality for sure.
Of course. I mean, I don't
and
know
then,
if you ever astral projected also.
Oh, yeah.
When you, or I've had it at times where I see myself, this is a while ago, a long time ago, and I would be on the roof, just below the ceiling, and I was still feeling like a solid kind of wall, so I'm still coming back down to the mind, like what's thinking, because when you're in this astral realm, what is saying to you, this is a physical wall, so I won't be able to go through it. I don't know if you've ever had that state before. Because normally if you're in the astral, you could just travel through, you know, anything.
Yeah. There are, for me, there haven't been any walls for me to come and go.
Oh. Well, yeah, for me, I have been in that state where it's like the way you would see your house. But just from a different perspective because you... on the below the ceiling. That's what's happened to me before. But I mean, and even with that, I'm thinking if you are in this non-physical, let's say you're in this astral, let's just say that your astral body, is it the same makeup as what the physical body would be, or do we just perceive it to be that way? Because then, if we are in that state, you would think that being a non-physical, you wouldn't maybe have, it would just be a vibration. So with that vibration, it wouldn't have eyes or arms or legs. But maybe we are still perceiving it to be that way. So I'm then thinking that because I could even close my eyes, what I would say would be my eyes in the astral, what felt like what would be the astral body. So I'm trying to understand that too. Totally going off track
well,
here, but
So, are you speaking of astral traveling?
Yes.
Astral traveling,
yes.
Situation where, in the movement of the traveling astrally,
yes.
You were seeing, you were above the floor, like.
up by the ceiling.
Correct.
In this space.
Correct.
And looking at the bedroom or living room or the room, whatever.
Correct.
Okay. So then what happened? So then you then the next thing you noticed,
I
want to
go
was
through the
that
roof.
You,
yeah, so I want to go through the ceiling and go out into, you know, into
space,
the open space.
And
yeah.
go down the road or up to the store.
Correct.
Or across.
Correct.
The country or whatever, and did and was not able to?
It wasn't that I wasn't initially. Initially, it was with seeing what I was seeing, the wall, it seemed what it was like a struggle to go through it. And I'm thinking...
So that's just a limitation you have in the
life of your mind?
That's
probably a limitation that I'd put on myself. But then within that same state, I came into that realization and just kind of let go and just kind of, through whether it's thought or whatever, I said to myself, I'm going up, and kind of just went up, and that's what happened. And then I came back down.
Right.
So,
as soon as you recognize that, oh, I want to go further, then you did, and then you came back.
Yeah.
Okay?
So it comes down
yeah.
to that whole thing again with the mind and, you know, everything. So if I'm in my non-physical body, am I still in my mind? Am I still? That's what I'm trying to understand. What the actual mind is.
But your astral. Well, I'm not. Well.
Is there still a connection to, let's say, whatever physically thinks?
See, when I travel. When I travel, I do it both ways. I do it physically, go.
Yes.
My whole body goes. I'm traveling. I just go. Astral travel
yeah.
as well, where just the astral body goes elsewhere. And my physical body, you know, is here in the chair or bed or whatever, or driving down the road or whatever. I don't know.
So you're talking about almost like bi-location? Are you bi-locating?
Yeah, that's another way to put it. Parallel traveling.
Okay.
Bi-locating. Yeah. Those are two different things.
Yes.
Astral traveling.
Is where the physical body is in the same place and you are just moving.
And your astral body.
Yes.
Or your whatever that is. I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to name it. It's
yes,
just the astral body.
Astral body, yes.
Goes somewhere else down the road to another world, just across the, you know, country, wherever, shows up, does whatever, has an experience,
yes.
has a, you know, whatever, and then returns, comes home.
Yes.
Now, what I do know about that experience, as well as parallel traveling or bilocating, is that if you come back before you leave, you won't recall going. But if you return a minute after you've left, if you're going to have time tell for you, you just use time versus time using you, then you will recall the experience of that traveling time. And that's a big chunk of overlaying that I work with as we speak, because they're, for me, sometimes I embrace the notion that I go and come back a minute or two after I've left, and then I recall it. And then there are the times when I know I've been and I've come back and I don't recall. I just know that I have a sense that I've brought some things back with me, or there's, you know, sand in my bed, or
yeah.
You know, or like I can't find my blue robe that I always had, and it's, you know, because
yeah.
I left it, and then it, you know, just those anomalies that occur, like, and I notice the anomaly, and so it kind of gives me the tell, and I know I'm just going to continue overlaying this knowing. I want to have the knowing. I want to know it all, see it all, hear it all. And it's getting out of your mind, getting, you know,
mm-hmm.
allowing that to be a real thing. And so what is the mind? It plays tricks on you. It is, are the captain of your ship or not?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
So now you are consciously, let's say, transporting your physical body at will and sometimes not at will.
I wouldn't use the at will for myself.
Okay.
What I do know is that it occurs, and sometimes I experience deja vu later when it shows up again, or I just have a sense that I've astral traveled, or I've parallel traveled. For me, in this conversation, I'm noticing, oh yeah, I guess there's a difference. And then there's the times that I know I have, and I know where I've been, and I know what occurred. I've gone and experienced some situation, some, you know, fun, some whatever,
yeah.
Or some not so, some scary sort of thing, or some, woo, oh my gosh, you know, I'm out of here, you know, kind of thing, or like, and just have a real no, just, and then I'm here in my home, I mean, I've had it be so subtle where I've walked in from outdoors having just taken the laundry off the line. And while I was taking the laundry off the line, a headband slipped off my head and fell on the ground. But my hands were, I had the laundry basket with the laundry in it.
Yes.
And so I brought it in to go back out through the glass door, which is actually a portal, to go fetch the headband on the ground where I was just at, and it's just not there anywhere. And I don't, what I don't understand what I don't get is, where was I that the laundry was that I went and took the, put it up on the line, took it up off the line, brought it back into my home, and I have it here. But where was I when I, where was I when my hairband fell off my head and landed on the ground?
Yes.
And yet I have my lawn, my clean clothes are with me today. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So don't, I really like that headband, but, you know, I've got a dozen others, so no big deal. Gee, I really wonder where it went. Okay. Well, how odd. You know?
I need to ask Ian about, for some, I mean, I think this is a common with everyone, is what is the deal with always one sock missing when you go to your laundry?
Yeah.
Is there a parallel world of some sort with some sock thief there?
In the washer, or is it the dryer? Yeah, it doesn't show.
Yeah.
It disappears in the dryer.
Mostly the dryer. But yeah, that's one
could be the
dryer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you go back to even check, and if you've got other washing left over, it's not there. And I swear, I have got.
And when all the wash is done, all the dirty clothes are clean, you're still missing
yes.
the match to that pair of sock and the match to that pair of sock.
Correct.
Never to be found ever again. Just poof, gone. Yeah.
And this is a common
ask
thing with everyone.
Ask him that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So interesting. But anyway, Tina, I think I'm going to have to cut off now.
Just noticing the clock on the wall, and I went, "Oh my gosh, it's 8:30." But hey, we're in the same neck of the woods. If you're in the Chicago area, I'm not too far from you.
You are Michigan.
Yeah. Okay,
great. Yeah. Awesome. Well, great.
Well, very
good,
Bruce. Good to talk with you, and we'll see you in the Yahoo group if you're there. Enjoy your postings and readings, and absolutely fabulous enjoyment here.
Yes.
Glad you showed up.
Yes, definitely. Thanks so much. Have a good evening.
Alrighty.
Alrighty.
You too.
Bye.
Bye now.